All right, good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance weekly conference call. Today is Monday, May 12th, 2014. And we'll start off, I'd like to read something from Proverbs. last couple of weeks, we've been starting off reading something from the Bible because I think it's appropriate. We're going to be counting on the grace of God to get through where we have to get through. And, of course, wisdom comes from the Bible. Anyway, Proverbs chapter 8, doeth not wisdom cry, and understanding put forth her voice? She standeth in the top of high places, by the way in the places of the paths. She cries at the gates, at the entry of the city, at the coming in at the doors. Unto you, O men, I call, and my voice is to the sons of men. O ye simple, understand wisdom, and ye fools, be ye of an understanding heart. Hear, for I will speak of excellent things, and the opening of my lips shall be right things, for my mouth shall speak truth, and wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the words of my mouth are in righteousness. There is nothing forward or perverse in them. They are all plain to him that understandeth, and right to them that findeth knowledge. Receive my instruction, and not silver, and knowledge rather than choice gold. For wisdom is better than rubies, and in all the things that may be desired are not to be compared to it. I, wisdom, dwell with prudence, and find out knowledge of witty inventions. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride, and arrogancy, and the evil way, and a forward mouth do I hate. Counsel is mine, and sound wisdom. I am understanding. I have strength. By me kings reign, and princes decree justice. By me princes rules, and nobles, even all the judges of the earth. I love them that love me, and those that seek me early shall find me. Riches and honors are with me, yea, durable riches and righteousness. My fruit is better than gold, yea, than fine gold, and my revenue than choice silver. I lead in the way of righteousness in the midst of the paths of judgment, that I may cause those that love me to inherit substance, and I will fill their treasures. The Lord possessed me in the beginning of his ways. Before his work of old, I was set up from everlasting, from the beginning, or ever the earth was. When there were no depths, I was brought forth. When there were no fountains abounding with water, before the mountains were settled, before the hills was I brought forth. While as yet he had not made the earth, nor the fields, nor the highest parts of the dust of the world. While he prepared the heavens, I was there. When he set a compass upon the face of the deep, when he established the clouds above, when he strengthened the fountains of the deep, when he gave to the sea his decree that the water should not pass his commandment, when he appointed the foundations of the earth, when I was by him as one brought up with him, and I was daily his delight, rejoicing always before him, rejoicing in the habitable parts of the earth, and my delights were with the sons of men. Now therefore hearken unto me, O ye children, for blessed are they that keep my ways. Hear instruction, and be wise, and refuse it not. Blessed is the man that heareth me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at the post of my doors. For whoso findeth me findeth life, and shall obtain favor of the Lord. But he that sinneth against me wrongeth his own soul. All they that hate me love death. Okay, that was Proverbs 8. All right, the big focus we want to start talking about is the federal case coming up on June 2nd. This is what we've been working for. This is what we've been focusing in for over a year. Of course, we know we've been trying to do this in the state, and we were concerned about the date, and, you know, the date had changed a couple of times, and, of course, they kicked us out of here, you know, one court to another, and, We went from one county to another, and it became clear that, of course, we are not going to get into the state courts. and if we did, we felt that maybe there'd be some disobedience from that judge. But in any event, it just got to the point where we could no longer wait any further, and it was time to take it to the federal court. Now, that could be a good thing, and it could be a problem thing, but I truly think a lot of it has to do with how you position yourself with jurisdiction. That is the key to the court, which I think I'm writing a paper on this right now, and to make it clearer, but we will talk a little bit about this tonight and give up some of the principles that we're coming into the court with that I don't think that they can resist. But again, the court date is June 2nd at 9:30 up in Albany, New York. And if you go to the front of our page, the front page on our website, the welcome page, I'm going to read what we have up there. This is the first paragraph. We put a paragraph up there on the very top of the page. We made note of the fact that only the people can save America. Time to stand has come, June 2nd, Albany. And underneath that, we have a paragraph, one paragraph. And so if you want to get the address, it's right there in this page, in this paragraph. And we wrote, calling all people to Albany, New York on June 2nd, 2014 at 9 a.m. at the James T. Foley House, 445 Broadway, Albany, New York, 12207. By writ quo vanto, the people demand the New York judicial stewards to give account of their stewardship. Motions, defenses, excuses, or lawyers will not be heard. Arrest will be demanded, and only the people can make this happen. Only the people can save the republic. Be there, pass the word. So tonight, what I want to focus in on, this is where we're at. This is what's going to change things. If they're going to be changed, it's going to be the people who make that change. And it is up to every person that is hearing this message tonight, and also through listening to the tape later on throughout the week. And we're going to be talking about this and focusing in on this every week until June 2nd. But it is up to everybody to get the word out, to get involved with get a hold of your state coordinator or coordinators, and let's get moving in your state. Let's get talking to all of the county organizers. We're not expecting people to travel across the country to Albany, but some people are determined and will do that, and God bless them, and of course we welcome them. But certainly those who are, within 4 to 6 hours of Albany, New York, for sure should make it to Albany, New York on that date. And we should call as many people as we can, notify whatever newspapers who will write the story. Just get the word out. Some of us throughout the nation have gone on to radio programs and have talked about the project that we're working on. I've been on quite a few radio programs. I'm going to try to go back to some of the programs we've been on and start putting the word out and focusing in on a date, particularly on the programs, the radio programs nearby, but pretty much anywhere. If we don't show up in force, they're not going to believe us. We need to be there in force. We need to let them know the people are watching. That makes a big, big difference in a courtroom, I'm telling you. We've seen it. Judges get all nervous when people show up, especially if they pile into the courtroom, especially if they flow out the door. And if it's possible to flow right downstairs and out the front door would really be great. That's what we need to do. We need to let them know that the people have had it and we're here to fix things. We need to get this job done. But again, people have to respond. We're going to go on a campaign. We got to think about this a little bit. I think maybe we'll talk about this next Monday. Maybe we're going to come up with some ideas. I know the last time we were setting a date up, we were telling people that they should send emails and maybe make phone calls and just to let them know we're here. So we'll think about that and what kind of messages we might want to send to the court, and we'll talk about that next week. Now, the federal court is an Article 2 court. It's the district court, And I've spoke with some people who were concerned. I myself was somewhat concerned a while back when I was looking at these district courts. But nevertheless, they are Article III courts. They were created by the Constitution. And that is a key point. The fact that they were created by the Constitution, they also have to obey the Constitution. And in Article III, it says is that judges hold their office during good behavior, which means all judges' actions must be authorized by law. The Supremacy Clause is law. Article 6, Clause 2 requires all judges to obey the law of the land. And the law of the land is the Constitution, which, of course, includes the Bill of Rights and also the Declaration of Independence. Those are the founding documents, and they must obey that and all codes and U.S. law. So we let's see. Article 3, Section 2 extends judicial power to all cases in law and in equity arising under the Constitution. Equity courts hear all cases under admiralty and maritime, that's law of the sea, and UCC cases, which are all inferior courts. They are courts without the tribunal. They are courts where actually a judge sits. And I have come to realize that all courts throughout the United States are chancery courts. We have chancellors. And judges and chancellors, they're the same thing. And so they're not common law courts, but we do have a common law court that's required by the Constitution. It's called law. Equity and in law is what is the two court systems basically that are set up. And at law or in law is common law. Law courts hear all cases under common law, which is the law of the land, and shall be trial by jury, also, of course, known as the people or the tribunal. So that is the requirement. So the key thing to any court case really is keeping your jurisdiction. We were very careful in writing our papers to make sure we focus in on the jurisdiction. We did a writ of prohibition, which put the judge on notice that he is not to make any decisions into the in this court during this court hearing. We wrote our papers very clearly to make it be known that this is actually the getting together and the gathering within the court of the grand jury itself. And we're coming to the federal courts for one purpose and one purpose only, and that is to get enforcement. We're not asking them to make any decisions. We're not asking them to hear the case. We're not asking them to do anything but give us enforcement. Maybe later on we'll read the Wherefore Clause. I don't remember whether we read it last week or not. I think we did. But the Wherefore Clause is very clear, and basically we want enforcement, and we want the order to come down from the federal court. And this is another key point. This federal case is exactly that. It's a federal case. And there are other places. There's another place to go, of course, if we have a problem in this. But I really don't think we will, because I think we're very careful. But nevertheless, this is a federal case, and we want our Wherefore Clause very careful to include every state in the union, every county in America, all 3,142 counties, which means a win or an enforcement in New York, in Albany County, is a win and an enforcement in every county of New York and in every county across the United States. Every state will have access into the courts if we win on June 2nd, 2014, which means on June 3rd, 2014, every single one of us could go down to our courthouse and demand access into the courts and to be given a place where we can come an office space within the court, because we need to be operating from within the court under the auspices of justice, and also a hearing, access to a hearing room. Okay, a place where the we can come together and talk as grand juries, and also to educate jurists as they are being brought together. And of course, it's okay to share hearing rooms with other groups, with judges or whoever. I presume they have a lot of conference rooms. Eventually, we should have our own conference room, but whatever we can get, we'll get. But that's when we can start our real work. Now, there's been some talk by some people. I saw some discussion going on that every county needs to do what we're doing in New York. Not true. Not true at all. It only has to be done one time in one place, and we're doing it right here in New York in Albany County. The last thing we want is anyone else going to do this, especially if they don't clearly understand positioning and jurisdiction. If you don't have your jurisdiction, if you're not clear, if you're not precise, if you don't cut them off to prevent them from acting, they can respond. And anybody who does this in another county, and if they fail, let's say we get through this process on June 2nd, and other people were to do it other places, and they would have failed, then there would be contradictory decisions, and that could throw the whole thing back in the air again, and then we're going to have to wait to get up to the United States Supreme Court, if we can get up there. I think if we have this one case and we go through and we do fail, I think we have a very good shot to get into the United States Supreme Court. I don't think that they can afford not to hear us. But in any event, we're not going to talk about those things. The focus is on winning the case on June 2nd and positioning ourselves in such a way that in order for him to go against us, to deny us, to act without permission, would be a violation of his oath, and he would be in bad behavior and therefore would have to be removed. And we would, of course, indict that judge for treason also, because he would be partakers with all the other judges that we brought into indictment. One of the other plans we're doing is we're writing a letter to every judge in New York. And let me see if I got that. I think I got a copy of that. Yes, I do. Maybe I'll read that. I don't know if I'm going to read every part of it, because it's about 11 pages, but I do want to read some of the important parts of it. And what our plan is we're looking to write a literal letter, paper letter, put it in an envelope, mail it, 11 pages long, and get it out to every single Supreme Court judge in New York State. And the reason being is to put them on notice that there are crimes being committed, and we need to report that to them. It's treason, and people are required to report treason immediately to the president, to a governor, or to a judge. And so we're going to report the treason. Someone's got an open mic, and we hear noise coming through. But we hear. Let me see.
Right, that's my phone.
Okay, see if I put a mute on him. Okay, he's got mute. So we're going to let him know that there is treason going on, and now we're going to put it in his hands to deal with it, or her hands, the judges. By doing this across New York, may get some judges to respond to this. And that's just another way we could possibly get access, if the other judges acknowledge the treason and sign the orders. And we would still go to the federal courts, because we're not going to trust getting it done in New York. We want the federal backing anyway. But we can get it done, and those judges then would be, assisting justice. But if they all reject and they all fail to act, that pretty much indicts the entire judicial system of New York. Every single court, every single judge throughout all of New York. And that strengthens our case in the federal court. That amplifies the problem in the situation here in New York into the federal courts. So that's why we're going to do that. We're going to follow that up. We sent a letter out recently to the sheriffs, and we did send copies out to all of those who are on our mailing lists. But we're also going to send a copy of the letter, and we're also sending another memorandum attached to the letter. It's a memorandum of authorities, which is actually in our case. And we'll send that out to all the sheriffs also. That'll probably be our next memorandum to the sheriffs, which is letting them know what we're doing in the courts here in New York, and you know, which ultimately is taking place in a federal court, which affects every place. It affects every county, so every sheriff should be aware of this. We also will probably send this by fax to every single clerk, both county clerk and court clerk, so they're abreast of what's going on, and also tell them to deliver it to all judges and all of the oath takers. I know they'll give them to the judges. They may not give them to any other oath takers, but pretty much the county clerks are it, and the court clerk is it, and their oath takers. And the judges, they will definitely send it to their oath takers. And, of course, we're going to send it to the sheriffs, so their oath takers. So they'll get that by fax. The sheriffs will get it by email, but we may fax the sheriffs, too. We'll see how that goes. It's a lot of work to do a lot of faxes, and it's a lot of work to do the papers. You know, each letter we send out is going to cost us 70 cents a piece just to mail it, plus the, you know, the tone of the paper and the envelopes. And we're not sure of how many judges yet. There's quite a few of them throughout New York, a lot of them. So whatever it is it's going to be, we got to do it. So we're going to have to put the money up one way or the other. Even if we have to take money from bill money to do it, we need to do it. And that's why we've been sending out some emails asking people to give us $5 a month in order to support what we're doing. We do have a lot of overhead, and it is extremely important that everybody gives $5. Some people can do more, 10, 15, 10 or 20, but that's fine, whatever you can do. But most people could do five. I do get an email from people from time to time, you know, saying that they're already given $5. You know, they don't need to give another $5. Or I'll get an email with somebody who just can't afford it. And I understand that. So, you know, we're not pushing people who can't afford it, but we need to get the word out. And when we send the email out, it goes out to everybody. We can't differentiate, you know, who's given and who's not given. And by email, that is, anyway, or who can afford it or who can't afford it. We just don't know. So we're sending it out to over 3,000 people. So everybody kind of gets it. So, again, you know, everyone can afford almost everyone can afford $5, and everybody needs to do this. Please don't think that the other guy is going to do it, because there's not many of the other guys that are doing it, just to let everybody know. And if we don't get the money to do what we have to do, then we're not going to be able to do these things, you know. We're trying to get it where we can, for Monday night meetings, for instance, we want to stream it directly from the website. But that costs money, you know. We had some money coming in. That money didn't make it. You know, they just backed out or whatever. They just didn't give it to us, people. And so we're not going to count on one person to give us the money. We did this twice, and it just doesn't work, and it always fails. So, look, you have to do it. Only the people can do it. So everybody doing $5, and we will do it. But there's a lot of work that needs to be done on the website, some more security. I made a list of stuff. I put in the email. I'm not going to go through it. Just look at the email. Pretty much everybody gets the email, and you'll see what we need the money for. And it needs to be paid, you know, on a monthly basis, a lot of different bills we have. Now, we did get an email. I had a short conversation with someone I was supposed to speak with a little earlier. Just somehow I missed them, but who has some background and might be able to do the streaming for us, and maybe even some security, some other things. So, you know, maybe we can get some of that stuff free. We'll see how that goes. Let's see. Everybody, and I think I mentioned this a while ago, everybody needs to get the word out to other people. You got to contact, you got to get organized in your state and start pushing other people to get involved, everybody should be here at this Monday night meeting. We're not getting everybody here. We have almost 3,000 people registered, okay, and a lot more than that aren't registered. But we have about just almost 3,000 registered. And yet we usually only get about 300 people or so on a call. That's 10%. That's not enough. We need more. We need more activity. We need people involved. If they're not coming, I talk to people sometime, and they're not even aware that we have a Monday night meeting. They're just not plugged in. Okay? So you have to plug them in. Every state has to deal, you know, you have a state coordinator. All the organizers in every county should be talking and meeting with the state coordinator and other organizers, and you guys should be having your own meetings once a week, half hour, an hour, whatever. And you should be organized. You should be getting on a phone campaign, calling the people that are not organizers, or even people that are organizers and aren't coming to the meeting. Get them active. Find out why they're not coming to the Monday night meetings. Get them to the Monday night meetings. If they can't come to the Monday night meeting, then they can download the program on Tuesday or Wednesday. You know, we always post it on Monday, late Monday night, usually. After the program, we post it right up. Get them to listen to the audio. Get them to your meeting. Your meeting is for the purpose, mostly right now, of organizing. You know, we're putting together an educational program, a literal test. We mentioned this for the last couple of weeks. It's going to have about 120 hours of a course that's about 120 hours long, which prepares people to become administrators, common grand jury administrators. It's going to be about 600 questions, and you know, again, we spoke about this before. You listen to a tape and you answer so many questions, and then you go to the next tape and so on. You can always rewind the tape if you get the questions wrong and find the answers and then move on. But that's going to cost money, too. And again, since we didn't get the money that we're anticipating, we're now dependent upon you to give us the money so we can pay for the technicians to create this on the website. This is beyond my technical ability. I don't have the ability to do this part. If we don't get it, it's because people aren't interested in, you know, giving in order to get it done. It's that simple. We got to do it or we don't do it. It's up to you. Same thing with the jurist handbooks. You know, we need to order 50,000 in order to get the price that we said we were going to do, which is 65 cents. We've got probably about 6,000 ordered right now, okay, but that's not enough. We're waiting. We were promised some money, so we were going to take money from that source and put it in to buy the 50,000 up front and then just send them out as people call, you know, asked for them. Until we can get, you know, enough money to cover the cost, obviously we can't order them. We can't have them brought to print. For less than that, you know, it costs too much money if we don't get to get 50,000 printed off in one shot. But anyway, the Juris Handbooks is a very, very important program we're doing. That's our educational program. Anybody who hasn't seen our Juris Handbook and the one we have up right now, I'm going to try to get the latest one up right tonight if I can. I'll take the old one down and put the new one up. But it's pretty much the same thing, just that the newer one has some corrections on it. And we have other people still looking at that, so we're probably going to make some more corrections before it goes out to print. But if you haven't seen our handbook, you need to go out and take a look at the Jurist Handbook. It's underneath the Jurist tab. And, well, actually, you can find it a lot quicker and easier, go into services and click on Jurist Handbook. And that's where you can order the Jurist Handbook. It's 100 booklets for $65, 65 cents a piece, minimum order 100. If you buy more, you can get them cheaper. You know, the more you buy, the cheaper they are. So people can come together in groups and buy more and get them cheaper. In any event, the handbooks you should read, and then you'll see how valuable they are. If you got to go to court, you should have that handbook in your pocket, because you can highlight some stuff and refer to that in court. There's so much powerful stuff in this handbook. When you give it to oath takers, they're going to get blown away when they look at what the real law is, and it's clear what the real law is. It's authority. We show authorities. So people who are just going to the, you know, to the puppet juries, if they get it into their hands, they'll see the real law too, and that'll cause some havoc in the system while we're trying to get in through the people who are being pulled in as jurists. But these handbooks, we need to get into the hands of the people. You know, we need to get them to Liberty Group members. We need to get them to the oath takers. And this is what makes clear what the law is, and we'll get people excited when they read what the real law is. So we need to do that. Okay, let's just look at the letter to judges, and then we'll open up to for a conversation. I don't think I'm going to read all of it. Let me see where I can find it. Hang on a second here. Here it is. I'm going to skip some parts. Let's see. All right. This is going to all judges, dear judge, and it references knowledge of misprision of treason. That's the law that's being that we're referring to. It's a U.S. code. We start off, dear judge, when the original 13 colonies became states, the other 37 states followed suit thereafter. It was the will of the people of each state to form a union by signing on to the ratified U.S. Constitution that became the contract binding the 50 states as one nation. The core of that contract, which cannot be altered, is expressed in Article 4, Section 4. The United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion of rights. The Article 6, Clause 2, known as the Supremacy Clause, states, this Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuant thereof, and all the treaties made, or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land. And the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or laws of any state, to the contrary, notwithstanding. So this is the supreme law of the land. So when judges tell us that the Fifth Amendment grand jury is for the federal courts and not for their courts, well, this here supremacy clause says different. All judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in their constitutions or laws of any states, to the contrary, notwithstanding, it will not stand. Therefore, the following statute is law to every judge, 18 U.S. Code 2382, misprision of treason. Whosoever owing allegiance to the United States and having knowledge of the commission of any treason against them conceals and does not, as soon as may be, disclose and make known the same to the President or to some judge of the United States or to the governor or some judge or justice of a particular state is guilty of misprision of treason and shall be fined under this title or in prison not more than 7 years or both. This letter is now to serve as notice to disclose and make known to you the following facts of conspiracy and treason. In the United States versus William, Justice Anton Scalia, writing for the majority, stated, the common law of the Fifth Amendment demands a traditional functioning jury, rooted in long centuries of Anglo-American history. The grand jury is mentioned in the Bill of Rights, but not in the body of the Constitution. It has not been textually assigned, therefore, to any of the branches described in the first three articles. It is a constitutional fixture in its own rights. And then we have the attached memorandum of authority. See the memorandum of authorities for more in-depth understanding, which we'll go through in a few minutes. Therefore, the administration and paneling and functioning of the jury separate from the courts over whose the court do not preside and is an unalienable right of the people protected under the Fifth Amendment for the sole purpose of self-rule by the people, regardless of what your bar schools have taught you. The people are unfettered by statutes in their performance as consentors. For the servant to seize control of this power and prevent the people from said unalienable rights would be high treason. And this is precisely what has happened and the purpose of this letter. We therefore report the following facts concerning treason for your action. On or about September 6, 2013, the people of New York started filing declarations of the reconstruction of the common law grand jury, and since that day, all 62 counties have been constituted. on or about September 25th. Now, I'm not going to go through all these on or abouts, but it basically goes through point by point by point by point of what was done and what they did to prevent things from going forward. And so let me kind of skim down to the end of this letter, and we'll look a little bit at the memorandum that's attached to this letter. Let's see. Okay, I'll read the last couple maybe. Let's see. All right, on or about April 29th, the tribunal filed a presentment against Carol Stevens. The Greene County Sheriff refused to serve on county clerk, and Greene County clerks refused to file by order of Carol Stevens and the county attorney. On April 29, 2014, the tribunal filed documents, information, abuse of power. Greene County Sheriff refused to serve on county clerk. Then Greene County clerks refused to file by order of Carol Stevens, county attorney. And there's a few more of those, but again, we're going to skip all that. All the defendants hold elected or appointed offices, have taken an oath, and in that capacity have a duty to speak directly, unfiltered, and forthwith. In said elected or appointed capacity, servants have no right to remain silent. The following are some of the charges against the treasonous conspirators. RICO, mail fraud, 18 U.S. Code 1341. Conspirators did use the Postal Service to remove files from the court record. Obstruction of justice, U.S. Code 1503. Conspirators did communicate by memorandums and phone calls in an endeavor to impede the common law grand jury. Obstruction of criminal investigations, 18 U.S. Code 1510. Conspirators did knowingly and with intent to obstruct the common law grand jury's investigation and judicial proceedings by refusing to answer questions and file judicial documents. Obstruction official proceedings, 18 U.S. Code 1512. Conspirators did corruptly persuade all New York County and court clerks to withhold and conceal documents from official proceedings. 14th Amendment Section 3 says, no person shall hold an office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state who, having previously taken an oath as an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same. Therefore, all the aforementioned perpetrators are imposters, and it is your duty to communicate with the grand jury in writing immediately for the purpose of filing the true bills with enforcement. This action would permit the justice to be served by the constitutional powers of New York State and prevent the indictment upon the entire judiciary body of New York for your failure to comply with 18 U.S. Code 2382. This is a final opportunity for New York judges to save New York Republic without the United States government's intervention. Please note that we filed the enforcement in the United States District Court for the Northern District of New York, case number 1.1:14CV552GTSCHV. And this letter is a last-ditch effort to offer an olive branch to the judges of New York State to end the tyranny in the people's courts and secure the republic on behalf of the people. Signed and sealed on behalf of the Unified New York Common Law Grand Jury, and then it's signed and stated to jury foreman. Now, like I said, I didn't read all of the charges. It's just way too many. It's quite a few pages. But I do want to read this memorandum of authorities, which is attached, because this is very important for them to understand, first of all, the authority by which we act, and the seriousness of the matter I think we get to at the end of this memorandum. Let me just get a drink of water before I read this. Okay, memorandum of authorities. The purpose of this memorandum is to clarify the authority by which we, the people, act upon, the process we executed, and the process we intend to proceed upon. The United States Supreme Court case, Boyd versus the United States in 1922, proclaims the remedy of today's problem when they said, it is the duty of the courts to be watchful for encroachments against constitutional rights. In Olmstead versus the United States, the court further stated further, decency, security, and liberty alike demand that government officials shall be subjected to the same rules of conduct that are commanded to the citizens. In a government of law, existence of the government will be imperiled if it fails to observe the law scrupulously. Our government is the potent and omnipresent teacher. For good or for ill, it teaches the whole people by its example. Crime is contagious. If the government becomes a lawbreaker, it breeds contempt for law. It invites every man to become a law unto himself. And that's exactly what we have in the courts. It invites anarchy. To declare that in the administration of the criminal law, the end justifies the means, to declare that the government may commit crimes would bring terrible retribution. Against that pernicious doctrine, this court should resolutely set its face. And so should every New York court do. But they will not, so the people will. The present jury system has been seized by our governments. They created a deceptive facade used to empower themselves and not the people. Bar schools teach judges and attorneys that statutes of men far removed from the people overrule the law of the land. While both prosecutors and judges impose their wills upon the judicially ignorant people as they require juries to interpret statutes as laws without opportunity to nullify. Whereas common law requires that the jury should judge both law and facts. Bar attorneys are true believers that the people are incompetent in the law when in fact it is they. We the people know the law while bar attorneys know statutes as law. Jefferson said, I know no safe depository of the ultimate powers of the society but the people themselves. And if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise their control with a wholesome discretion, the remedy is not to take it from them, but to inform their discretion by education. This is the true corrective of abuses of constitutional power. He also said, an enlightened citizenry is indispensable for a proper functioning of a republic. Self-government is not possible unless the citizens are educated sufficiently to enable them to exercise oversight. It is therefore imperative that the nation see to it that a suitable education be provided for all its citizens. Now, they've purposely taken that away from us. We used to have a suitable education. We don't have that, and we haven't had that for perhaps 100 years. But we have provided that here on NationalLibertyAlliance.org. And everybody should be going through these courses, and eventually we will get these testing processes up so people can go through that process in order to take on these positions to... Am I coming through now? Testing 1, 2. Gerard? All right, I got a phone call that I'm off. I'm presuming I'm not coming through. So can anyone hear me? Gerard, are you here? Can you hear me? All right, I just unmuted someone, 603. Can you hear me?
Yeah, that's me. That's Kathleen.
Okay. How long have I been off? Where did I end up getting lost?
Let's see. It's hard to tell on the chat for time-wise. It's been a good few minutes.
How long?
A few minutes.
Okay. All right, well, let me just pick up where I'm at. I'll just go back a little bit to finish this paper off. This is I was reading the papers, as I'm sure most of it was heard, I hoped, and I was into the memorandum that's attached to it. Let me get back to that. I'm going to leave you unchecked. If you don't hear me or something goes wrong, maybe you could try to get me. Okay, Kathleen?
Sure.
All right. Now let me get rid of all these messages. I got so many phone calls, so I guess people were trying to call me for a while. Okay, I'll just go back a little bit. Let me pick up... After I finished off reading about Lysander Spooner, we quoted some of his work, and we'll pick up right after that. And this is the memorandum to the all the judges. Our attention is to bring justice back into the people's out of control courts. That is destructive to the America envisioned by our founding fathers. Therefore, the authority by which we act is in fact our unalienable right, is in fact founded in that we, the people, are the posterity of our founding fathers, the inheritors of the documents that created the government that you serve in. And we resist the attitude that the people are not capable of self-government. Whereas we read the Declaration of Independence, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government being destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundations in such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Therein, it is the people's right, and it is our duty to alter that which is destructive to our safety and happiness by returning to common law juries and common law courts, as it is written in the Constitution for the 50 United States of America. This is further realized in the preamble of our Constitution, that is the people that ordained and established the law, where we read, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. And with these absolutes, we further submit the following authorities by which the judges in every state shall be bound. The authority of the people to form and administer to grand and petty juries is an inalienable right protected and secured by the 5th, 6th, and 7th Amendments. Whereas we read, where rights secured by the Constitution are involved, there can be no rulemaking or legislation which would abrogate them. Miranda versus Arizona. The state cannot diminish the rights of the people. Hurtado versus the people of the state of California. All laws, rules, practices, and which are repugnant to the Constitution are null and void. Marbury versus Madison. In most state constitutions, an impartial jury is guaranteed. Obviously, when the government administers to the jury, it can no longer be considered impartial, but tainted. How can it be when the government seeking a conviction by government-paid lawmakers, government-paid judges, government-paid prosecutors, and government-controlled juries, that they call the jury impartial? In the case United States versus Williams, 1992, Justice Anton Scalia, writing for the majority, said the court's cases relying upon that power deal strictly with the court's control over their own procedures, whereas the grand jury is an institution separate from the courts, over whose functioning the courts do not preside, rooted in long centuries of Anglo-American history, citing Hanna versus Lash. Justice Anton Scalia continued, courts neither preserve nor enhance the traditional functioning of the grand jury that the common law of the Fifth Amendment demands. The grand jury is mentioned in the Bill of Rights, but not in the body of the Constitution. It has not been textually assigned, therefore, to any of the branches described in the first three articles. It is a constitutional fixture in its own rights. In fact, the whole theory of its function is that it belongs to no branch of the institutional government, serving as a kind of a buffer or a referee between the government and the people. Scalia continued, although the grand jury normally operates, of course, in the courthouse and under the judicial auspices, its institutional relationship with the judicial branch has traditionally been, so to speak, at arm's length. The grand jury's functional independence from the judicial branch is evident both in the scope of its power to investigate criminal wrongdoing and in a matter in which the power is exercised. Unlike a court whose jurisdiction is predicated upon a specific case or controversy, the grand jury can investigate merely on the suspicion that a law is being violated, or even because it wants to ensure that it is not. The grand jury need not identify the offender, its suspect, or even the precise nature of the offense it is investigating. The grand jury requires no authorization from its constitutional courts to initiate an investigation, nor does the prosecutor require leave of the courts to seek a grand jury indictment. The grand jury, in its day-to-day functioning generally operates without the interference of a presiding judge. The grand jury swears in its own witnesses, deliberates in total secrecy. We have insisted that the grand jury remain free to pursue its investigation investigations unhindered by external influences or supervision, so long as it does not trench upon the legitimate rights of any witnesses called before it. Recognizing this tradition of independence, we have said that the Fifth Amendment constitutional guarantee presupposes an investigative body acting independently of either prosecuting attorney or judges. We have said that certain constitutional protections afforded defendants in criminal proceedings have no application before the grand jury. We have twice suggested, though not held, that the Sixth Amendment right to counsel does not attach when an individual is summoned to appear before the grand jury, even if he is the subject of that investigation. In conclusion, Scalia said, given the grand jury's operational separateness from its constituting court, it should come to no surprise that we have been reluctant to invoke the judicial supervisory power as a basis for prescribing modes of grand jury procedure. Over the years, we have received many requests to exercise supervision over the grand jury's evidence-taking process, but we have refused them all. We declined to enforce the heresy rule in the grand jury proceedings, since that would run counter to the whole history of the grand jury institution, in which laymen conduct their inquiries unfettered by technical rules. Hume called the grand jury an institution admirable in itself, and the best calculated for preservation of liberty and the administration of justice that ever was devised by the wit of man. Therefore, we the people affirm and proclaim the unalienable right to consent or deny the actions of our elected servants through common law jury, as our founding fathers provided for in the Fifth, Sixth, and Seventh Amendment. As Justice Anton Scalia put it, the grand jury is in effect a fourth branch of government, governed and administered to directly by and on behalf of the American people, and its authority emanates from the Bill of Rights. It is a constitutional fixture in its own right. In fact, the whole theory of its function is that it belongs to no branch of institutional government, serving as a kind of a buffer between government and man. We, the people, demand that tyrants' servants step aside. On February 27, 2014, New York was the first state to constitute the reinstatement of the common law grand jury in all 62 counties by placing news releases and local papers in each county and inviting people by phone for a presentation and then a showing of hands to reinstate the people's unalienable right of the common law jury. In all but one county where two people declined, it was unanimous. Since then, nine other states have joined New York in constituting the process in every county within their state. They are Florida, Connecticut, Rhode Island, New Jersey, New Hampshire, Arizona, Massachusetts, Maryland, and Maine. And we anticipate at least four other states, Washington, Oregon, Pennsylvania, and Delaware, before the end of May 2014, to be completely constituted. We, the people, are actively working in every state of the Union to save the Republic by reinstating the common law jury in every county and anticipate all the states to be constituted before the fall of 2014. And the following declaration of each American county. Now, I put in a copy of the declaration. I'm not going to read that. It's a one-pager. And we'll just bring to the end three more paragraphs. This right of declaration of self-rule was rejected by arrogant servants who think they are the masters. This is the people's peaceful revolution to take back our republic. America stands at the precipice, and if our hired servants who have taken hold of our house of justice continues to resist, thereby preventing the only institution capable of solving her problems, the people will not give up their liberty and are willing to give their lives for justice and their posterity. The people come with an olive branch, and to the alternative will meet force with equal force. President Kennedy said, a revolution is coming, a revolution which will be peaceful if we are wise enough, compassionate if we care enough, successful if we are fortunate enough. But a revolution which is coming, whether we will it or not, we can affect its character. We cannot alter its inevitability. This great fallen hero and martyr, before giving his life, went on to say, those who make peaceful revolutions impossible will make violent revolutions inevitable. It is at this precipice we stand today. It is for this purpose we are here today. And we resolutely set our face, and by the grace of our God, we will succeed today. It has taken the people 50 years to realize and react to President Kennedy's warning of the revolution that unfolds before us as we stand at that precipice that will decide the fate of America. This court's action is our peaceful and compassionate response in an endeavor to positively affect its character. And that's the end of that memorandum. Okay, with that, I'll open up the lines. I apologize for the disconnect. I'm going to have to set something up for next time in case that happens again, so that I can know that we've been disconnected. But let's take some questions now. We'll go to our first caller. It's a wireless caller, 760-447. Go right ahead.
Hi, John. This is Joe out in California.
How you doing, Joe?
Good. Hey, I got a question concerning the possible errors in some of these documents, like there's a Ray versus Donovan or another, and I don't have it before me so I can cite the case. But my thinking on that is that we're really in this to do the right thing. So the only reason why somebody would use a mistake of ours or yours, anybody who's writing these writs and stuff, use that as an out, is somebody who's actually protecting their, you know, criminal activity. So my thinking on that is, like, let's say you do have a quote that's misplaced in one of those writs that you have, and you give it to the clerk or the judge or somebody, and then they see that problem. Isn't that where they're supposed to be doing that job anyways? So they should be helping us with the paperwork.
I know we did remove the Donovan one from the juris book. I thought we removed it from most of our paperwork, but it could have gotten through. But, you know, hey, look, errors do get through. You can't be perfect. And, you know, we got people who check the work, and then I've done it twice with two different people. We're doing a third time with another person. But some people have a different focus, and other people, you know, who really knows who's right at some point, because then there are more changes constant. Now, it is true that with the quote wants to be accurate, and we have checked out most of our quotes. Most of the quotes that I have, not all, but most of the quotes that I have come from Black's Law, fourth edition particularly, but it could have come from a second edition. It didn't come from anything later. It also could have come from Beauvoir's. And then some that I have gotten is from other groups over the years. But most of it is coming from Black's Law, so I'm kind of surprised if we do have many errors in those quotes. Sometimes a quote may not be complete, you know, and we'll put the triple dots in between, and people might complain. Now, if someone had done that already, and I noticed Thornton had done that on a few occasions and didn't put in the, and I'm presuming it's Thornton. He may not have done it. Maybe it's someone else, and he had picked it up and put it on his site. And maybe the dots wouldn't put in between, and then it wasn't realized until you check it out. But look, we do the best we can to check this stuff out. We're going to have errors no matter what we do. It doesn't matter. It's going to happen. We will do the best we can to prevent it. And we can only check it over so many times, you know, and again, you know, do the best we can. So, I mean, if you want to participate, you're welcome to participate in that channel of checking. You know, you're welcome to that.
Yeah, I try to do most of my work on the forum, and we had spoken about, like, the anti-federalist papers, and I actually put a link on the forum that I tried to get to you through Skype to just answer the questions that you had asked me about what I thought was wrong in the Constitution itself, according to what I read from the Anti-Federalist Papers. So I put that in a link so that when you get a chance, when I get a hold of you on Skype or something, I'll just link that, and then you can see where my viewpoint is on those specific problems with the Constitution, how it is in many ways repugnant to both the Declaration of Independence.
Well, I don't know that you could say many ways, but you know, there are some things I'm wondering about, like the word citizen used a few times. But again, you know, look at this is a word game that the enemy plays. And you know that the enemy was amongst us when the Constitution was being made, so I'm sure a few things got in there. But they're all word games. And, you know, when you read through them, unless you start interpreting the words the way the fraudulent groups of people want us to interpret them, and then we start playing in their little sandbox, and then we give them authority by doing that, I say to heck with them, and let's take it for what it really means. I mean, we lay it out. The key part to our Constitution, ultimately, is the Bill of Rights, and that's what has protected us very, very greatly. The rest of the Constitution, as the body of the Constitution, lays out what the government can do, and basically I think it's pretty darn good. I've been through most of it, well, all of it, actually, but I mean, I've looked very, very deeply at most of it, and I'm pretty comfortable with it, but there are a few words I'm concerned with. But again, in order to get the wrong impression, you have to interpret a word in a certain way, and you're playing in their sandbox too. So again, we have to consider that. But we're all people. We all have faults. We all have errors, and we do the best we can. And when you bring the whole thing together, when something is contrary to what we see as a whole, it becomes obvious that it's not really meant that way. It's meant the way we see it as a whole. And basically, It brings us to liberty from the standpoint that the government has absolutely zero authority to make any statutes and call them law that controls the behavior of people. That's the key. And the other key is controlling the judicial and the political process through the jury, both grand and trial. Once we have, with those two things, we're in pretty darn good shape, no matter what mistakes might or might not be there. But we will look into them a little later. I'd like to spend some time, and I'm going through the Federalist Papers right now. I'm going through the Anti-Federalist Papers also. I don't know if anybody has done a really good in-depth study to give it some harmony between the Anti-Federalist and the Federalist Papers. If anybody knows of any work out there that was done, sort of a harmony, that would be appreciated. I'd like to get that info. And also, if anybody has done anything in such a way as you can see clearly, you know, what the different subjects are, you know, I'd like to see that. But I'm not aware of that. Maybe one day one of us might do that if nobody else has already done it, that work.
Yeah, I just wanted to clear up that, mainly that problem with errors. If we're all on the same page, then we all want to fix all the errors. So
right. Well, somebody, we will fix any error that we become aware of. And remember, you know, sometimes people pick up errors after it's done, and nothing we can do about that. And you know what? We make errors. I've been in court, and let me tell you, these judges and these lawyers, they're full of a lot more errors than we have. Their English is far more atrocious than ours. They speak like third graders, in my opinion, you know, when they write anyway. And they quote things that don't say what it says they say. And I want to tell you, a lot of times when they quote things, when they say it says this, and you go look at it, you say, oh, no. This supports our side. It doesn't support your side. And we re-quote them and make the correction. So, you know, we all have flaws, and we do the best we can. And sometimes when it's out there, it's too late. You can't reel it back in. But we acknowledge that we're imperfect. And we will make the correction as it's brought to us. We'll acknowledge that correction.
Right. And so hopefully sooner rather than later, the breakthrough occurs on June 3rd, sooner rather than later. And then everybody who's working on this now has an open door so that we can begin to actually get on the same page, which is defense of our liberties and do it in a manner that does challenge these people who are actually criminals working under the color of law. And that's everybody that's looked into anything that has to do with problems in our world, understand that. Everybody knows that the politicians are liars, and so if you find one that tells the truth, like a Ron Paul or somebody like that, then that's the exception, not the rule. So there's a lot of work to do, and when you get that done, sooner, hopefully, rather than later, then all the work that we've been doing will make a lot more sense. At least that's the way I see it.
Well, agreed. All right, anything else, Joe?
That's it. Thanks, John.
Okay, thank you. And we're going to, you know, a couple of people have asked me to stay on point and not get too involved in, you know, personal cases, and sometimes I guess we do. So we're going to try to stay on point and focus and you know, just go forward. Gerard, are you out there? If you're out there, if I get too lost on something or if I'm too long with someone, you might want to push me along. But okay, the next caller is a 407 number. Go right ahead, 407.
Hello, John?
Yes.
Yeah, this is John in Seminole County, Florida.
How you doing?
Doing great. Got a couple of questions. We're using, you know, we're filing our paperwork with the, our election paperwork with the counties and everything, and some of the counties are getting back letters with their packages, and they're saying that they're not required by law to file these, and so... And a lot of times the laws that we quote to them are penalties that if they don't file. And every single one of those laws, and I could read one, for example, like Title 18 of USC, Section 2076. In here it says, shall be required, oh, did I move it or something? clerk is to file, whoever being a clerk willfully refuses to neglect or whatever, blah, 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 document is required by law. So I spent about 3 hours the other day looking for this law that requires them to file certain documents, and I finally found it in the Florida statutes. And all it says is that they're required to file things like liens and judgments and mortgages and,
mm-hmm.
And things like that. None of it says anything about
well, bear in mind.
That come from the people.
Yeah,
so
bear in mind. Well,
is
well,
there
that's not
law
true.
That we are missing.
But yeah, that's not true. What you have to understand is documents and judicial documents. If you read through those things, you'll discover anything that is the process of law. In other words, when the grand jury puts a paper into the file, nobody can stop that paper. To stop that paper is a violation of law. Okay, in the case of what we did with sending them the papers, really is a memorial of what we've done, and also a paper to let them know what we've done and how we've done it, and that we're here. We don't necessarily require that they actually file it, but they're to keep it on their file somewhere. They have nothing, they have nothing for them to do with it, just to know that it's there and that we're going to give them a call in 10 days or a certain period of time, and we're going to come up there and get access into the courts. Now, as far as the county is concerned, they have to file it. We put right in there that it's to be filed under miscellaneous. It's a notice to all men for a memorial. Now, they, by law, must file it, because it's a declaration, and any declaration filed by any individual, any person, is required by law for them to file it. Now, they try to charge you a fee, and that fee is illegal, and we're not sending them a fee. So if they send the papers back, we keep them until we get into power. We'll bring it back to them, and they'll file it once we get in power. Until then, they won't, and it is what it is. But we've done all the honorable things. We've done the appropriate things. And we serve notice to everyone, to both clerks that are required to know. And they can ignore it. They can think whatever they want. It doesn't matter. When we get in court, they'll be thinking the proper thing, and that is that they need to be obedient to the law. And we're going to bring those papers back. They're going to file them, and we're going to make them be obedient unto the law, and that'll be that. And so we'll, at the end, it'll work out.
Funny thing, though, that law that I found, that Florida statute 28.222, in there mentions a whole bunch of documents, doesn't mention anything about a memorial, and it does say that you have to pay a fee right in the statute.
Yeah, but statutes are not law. Yeah.
I know.
Well, first of all, even though we don't use the word memorial in the paperwork, I'm saying that's what it is. It's a memorial. But what we do say is that it's a notice, and it's a notice to all men, and that it is to be filed in miscellaneous in the county. That's what we say. I have filed declarations for myself, personal, declaring certain things and also letting people know what I charge when they violate my unalienable rights. I filed that in a declaration in the county, and they filed it. I know a lot of people who have done that. So when I have to sue somebody, my charges, $25,000 or $50,000, per incident on certain things, and it's already established. Mm-hmm. So if they can say, well, where'd you come up with that number? Well, I posted it long before you violated my unalienable rights in the miscellaneous place. You can go there and take a look with the county clerk.
You know, a funny thing about some of the paperwork that some of the people are getting back from the county clerks, or the court clerks, excuse me, quote U.S. versus Williams. I find that pretty funny because they're using it as if it's ammunition for them when it's really backfires because it's our ammunition, you know?
Exactly. Again, this is how sneaky they are.
I know. I have another question. The paper you just read, is that on the website?
Not yet. It will be. Well, let me see what's it called. Well, the letter to the judges is not up there yet. I haven't gone through it. I got it out to somebody who I need to get back to. Matter of fact, Kathleen, who was just on the line, to go through it for errors, punctuation, and things like that. The memorandum of authorities is actually in our case. So that is up on the website. You can get that probably in the federal filing. It's probably in that one. Did I lose you? I think I lost him. I don't know what happened to him. All right, anyway, let me go to this next caller, Ronald. I wonder what happened. Can anyone hear me? I don't know why the Q&A went off. Let me go back into Q&A. All right, I'm back in Q&A. I don't know how that got kicked off, but anyway, people have to punch back into the Q&A to get in line. 239, wireless caller, you're going to be next. Go right ahead.
Hi, John. This is Ron Angel.
Can you speak up?
Hey, can you hear me?
You're not close to your mic or your speaker or something. Okay, try it now. I can hear you.
Hi, John. This is Ron.
How you doing, Ron?
I'm good. Thank you for all you're doing and all the just incredible work that you've done to put these wonderful information sessions together. Back in 2007, I was attempting with some scientists and engineers. We had discussed opening grand juries, but we were unable to do so because we had no phone communication that worked, no email here in Florida, nothing. And so I was able to get information out to the International Criminal Court and tell them about these abuses of our inalienable rights, and they did respond to me, and they gave me an International Criminal Court case number, and I did a lot of research into what took place after World War II, and the fact that the U.S. ratified and signed the Geneva Conventions in 1948, and from everything that I've read and that I know, it specifically states that if U.S. state court and U.S. federal courts fail, international criminal courts immediately kick in and are applicable. And international criminal court doesn't have to be held in Brussels, Belgium, at The Hague, like it was during after World War II. You can have an international criminal court of justice anywhere. And simultaneously going along with what you have been wonderfully doing is international criminal courts that have been formed, and there have been indictments, and people have been found guilty. And what I wanted to say is if these judges don't recognize what you are saying is important and valid, they will be held to international criminal courts and world courts of justice for their crimes against humanity, their human rights violations. And I believe I sent you a document that's in French from the International Criminal Court. It's an OTC case number. And let me grab that number so everyone has it. Did you ever get that PDF of that letter to your email?
I don't recall it. I get a lot of mail, and I really don't get a lot. I can't answer, or I just dump at some point mail. I just can't keep up with it.
Okay. It's a letter in French, but it references the abuses that have been done to the American people through the system of the politicians and corrupt political, corrupt government officials that have been in power probably since 1977. And it's an extremely powerful document. It has, you know, the International Criminal Court stamping on it. And I'd like to also note that in 1998, President Clinton ratified the Rome Statute. And that thereby holds the United States to International Criminal Court and world courts in terms of prosecution for the crimes that have been committed, that we are trying to seek justice through a lawful and just means through the American system that was set up by our founding fathers, which should be working, but is not working. And so...
Right, but you got to bear in mind that all the mechanisms for it to work is still in place. The federal court, and again, I don't understand or know anything about the international courts. I haven't researched that, and so I can't comment particularly on anything of that nature. But I can only comment on what I have researched and looked into. And one of the key things with the federal courts, remember, the court that we're going to, which is a district federal court here in New York, there are so many, let me think, there's one in New York City, there's one in Westchester County, and then there's one in Albany, and then I think there's one other out west. So I think there are four federal district courts here in New York. Now, they, we spoke about this a little earlier, that they have in the Constitution, they have the authority in different courts. The one court which they ignore and they hide and they constantly, rob you away from, they carry you away from, they kidnap you out of, is the common law. And they know what they're doing. They are doing this on purpose. Because there's money and power involved in them doing this in their cases that they're involved with. But it is a chess game with these people, in my humble opinion. I truly believe that. If you really are very careful with your paperwork, and, if you go into court and let's say you're in a case and someone brings up a code that they're operating. Let's say they do a motion as per this statute or that statute. Well, if you don't object to that statute being used to begin with, okay, you just changed your jurisdiction from common law and went right into the nisi prius process, and they got a hold, and you're done. You got to pick up on all these little things that they do. They're constantly robbing you of your jurisdiction, and if you are very, very careful and pay attention to every word and every phrase they use, and especially when they make quotes or pull you into a different thing or to try to get a consent out of you in any way, even if it's just consent by you not responding, you're going to lose your jurisdiction. But if you're careful not to let that happen, especially in a federal court, and you lay it on the line what his job is, and I think we've done that pretty good in our paperwork, and I will be reviewing it, and we are going to add another paper, by the way, which clarifies some more things, just to make sure we're tightened up on our jurisdiction and making sure that we're not being moved from it. We're going to reiterate the fact that this federal judge, as the state judge, we're going to give him a someone's phone ringing here? I guess I'm coming through. Okay. We're going to give them a writ of prohibition, which we gave to the state judge. We're going to give to this guy. And there's a few other things we're putting together to clarify things. And we are focusing very heavy on the supremacy clause and good behavior and bad behavior. And he's going to know and understand very clearly by the time we get into that courtroom that he can't do or say anything but obey and sign. That's all he can do. He can refuse to do that, but I'm sure he's going to understand we're going to indict him and move to the next person. And we'll see how we do that. We may try to – I don't want to say what we'll do after that. There's a couple more things we can do, but I'm not going to say – because I don't even know which one we're going to do next until we see what they do. But my point is this. If he denies and rejects, or she denies and rejects the signing of that paper for enforcement, okay, then they have become guilty of conspiracy and part and parcel with all of these judges in New York. And this is why it is extremely important that we get as many people as we can. We will have alternative news there. But I don't know. We're going to try to get other news. But, you know, they haven't been responsive. They are really just so far out there. They have lost their way completely. So
what I want to say here is really important, though. I brought up to you before, you know, if people ever threaten our movement or any one of us for doing what we're doing, there's a federal statute. It's U.S. Code Title 18, Section 241, deprivation under color of law, which basically says we have the right to remain free and independent. And if someone, i.e. such as a judge or an official, takes that freedom from us, they are guilty of massive crimes and can be, and if a death results, they can be fined and imprisoned for life. And that's Title 18, Section 241 and Title 18, Section 242 of U.S. Code. Now, that has already been done to many people after 2006, after it was called the Military Commissions Act of 2006, October 17th. And that was violated very much in New York, in Michigan, Illinois, Ohio, Indiana. And so I have an international case number because I have sent evidence to the Special Rapporteur of Torture on the International Criminal Court, and they have come out and investigated my findings, and I've given them evidence. And so we have a case number in the International Court.
Let me suggest this. Why don't you give the number out, let people research it, and if anybody does research on this, and I'm talking research, I'm not interested in conclusions or information without the details, the facts, and because we have to really know what we're talking about. We have to have the authorities and everything. So if anybody wants to research this and then one day lay out the authorities and everything, do a paper on it and get it together, but again, it's got to be really complete. It'll help to educate us. I haven't got time at this point to educate myself there.
This document you should present to the judges, because when they see this document, they then realize...
Which document is that?
It's from the International Criminal Court, case number OTP-CR-00122. /07, April 23rd, 2008. A letter from them in regard...
Repeat those numbers again.
Yep. It's International Criminal Court case number OTP-CR-00122/07, April 23rd, 2008.
Okay, international what?
International Criminal Court.
Okay, hold on. Let me write that down.
International Criminal Court. Actually,
okay.
Reference.
OTP.
Slash CR.
Slash.
No, hyphen CR. OTP hyphen.
Hold on. Let me recorrect this now. OTP hyphen CR.
Dash 00122.
Okay, / 07.
Yes. And that's
then April 23rd, 2008.
Yeah, this is a letter in recognition to the crimes committed to the people in the U.S. and world, because we know that as people have left the U.S., their violations of their rights.
All right, I'll look into that and read that and see once what I can think about it. Again, you know, I would not bring anything into a court case that I don't really understand, and I have to look into it.
I do know that the U.S. ratified the Geneva Conventions after World War II in 1948, and it specifically states, because I've been to the United Nations in New York, and I've been to the United Nations in Vienna, Austria, and I picked up the Declaration Against Torture, Article 1, the Declaration Against Torture, is 1975, and it specifically states the rights and what torture is and what a violation entails. What we're going through every day is a violation of international law, as well as a violation of our Constitution.
Well, again, I agree with you, that it is a violation of international law, too, I'm sure. We're spending too much time on something that's really, at this point, can't benefit us. If someone wants to do the research and get it to us, and then be edified by that, then we can start thinking a little bit about that. I think it's premature, because I do truly believe we're going to be successful here, right in the state.
And
I believe it's going to be in a federal court. There's a couple of things after June 2nd. If we don't accomplish what we want, there's still more things for us to do, which, again, we're not going to talk about.
Because we had an injunction filed, and it was supposed to be successful, to stop the chemtrailing at Lawrence Livermore Labs in 2006, and it has not been successful. In fact, it's gone the other way.
And that's in the international court?
No, that was in a federal court.
Well, again, listen to what I'm saying here. This is extremely important. It's not necessarily the case that the federal court shot it down boldly and just ignoring the law. It is usually the case, in my opinion, everything that I've seen out there, it's because people don't know how to maintain their jurisdiction. They are so slick. You have to have a mindset, and I haven't met many people with the mindset that have developed to a point where they can start to see exactly where they're pulling you from, out of jurisdiction. When you go to the United States Supreme Court, go out to Washington, they only take so many cases a year, and there's a lot of cases that go up there, but they take a quick look at these cases, and if they're going to respond to a case, it's got to be a case that stays on point in the jurisdiction before they take on a case. And I really don't think that there are many people that stay within the jurisdiction. Remember, most cases are fought by lawyers. Even if someone's paying a lawyer to do the right thing to get it done, the lawyers are a bar taught to begin with, and they constantly leave the jurisdiction, which taints the case, which prevents the United States Supreme Court from ruling in their favor because they're in the wrong jurisdiction and they don't know it. Constitutionally, the case should be won, but because of the jurisdiction, it's lost. And so when a case is lost on what you're talking about, particularly the chemtrails, there's no doubt in my mind. I'd love to read the case, but, you know, I'd have to read it all to see, you know, again, what the other side said and what this side said. You got to see the whole thing. And all it takes is a couple of things on the other side for people to do or say, and your side doesn't do anything about it, and you just lost your jurisdiction, and you're in, and that's it. You're lost. You're done. Okay?
And we've also
you can lose
a
case on just one sentence from the other side. You could be right on everywhere, and one sentence takes you and moves you right out of your jurisdiction, especially in federal court.
We've also had federal rulings that the Patriot Act was unconstitutional by a federal judge, but yet it never makes the media. It never makes it, you know, it never makes it around the block.
Right.
So my question is, you know, the Patriot Act has been ruled unconstitutional by a federal judge, but yet why are we going through these why do we have to really struggle to get justice and to get our constitutional rights and our civil rights back? It
should because evil is in charge.
Yeah. Well, that's why with genocide and with human rights violations, that's why everything you're doing has already been paralleled with an international criminal court case backup number. So their crimes are you know, they're not just treasonous against the U.S. and high treason. Their crimes are international crimes as well. I just want to make that point.
That's not my place of research yet. And it's not that it's not going to go there. It's just that if I were to go there now, I wouldn't be able to do what we're doing here with this. Someone else has to do that research and then deliver it to us, and then we can get a little more appreciation for it. But
I'll send that information to you. And, you know, I'm much happier to have it dealt with in the U.S., system, because that's the way it should have been handled.
We the people need to stay within where we're at. We have the best system set up. The problem is that there's nothing wrong with our government. There's nothing wrong with our judicial system process and procedures. The problem is that we have evil people in charge. Every case that is won. Okay, in any case I've ever seen, is being won without subject matter jurisdiction, without a personam jurisdiction, every single case. They don't have them, either of them. And the judges know it, and even when you bring it up to them, and this is on a state level anyway, when you bring it up to them, they don't care, because they're just dumb, and they just don't care. And they're so used to breaking the law and being protected from the people above them, and the people above them, and the people above them, they're not worried about it. Okay, so that's why they wasn't worried about us. But now they better be worried because, you know, we filed the papers on Friday. They got it this morning. Every one of them got it this morning. So I wish I was a fly on the wall in some of these offices, but I'd love to know what's going on there. But in any event, they got it. Now we're in the federal courts. Now, the federal courts is a whole different animal. These are educated people. They read. They know the game. They play chess. I know it. I've only been in federal court once, and I won in federal court. But I want to tell you, these guys are really slick, and I can see, you know, he understood everything I said. He understood everything. He even corrected me. He understood the common law side. He corrected my language, the way I pronounced the word, and so on the common law. And
well,
so
I'm
they
glad
know.
It's in Albany, because that's where Paul Revere was born, Albany, New York.
Mm-hmm.
So just a little history fact, Albany was a good choice.
It ended up in Albany only because the jurisdiction, according to the way they think about jurisdiction, we hit in Columbia County and Greene County, and that's where the obvious law breaking took place, and the jurisdiction for that is Albany. So that's why we went to Albany. But Albany is also better than going down to New York City. That'd be a wreck, you know?
Okay, well, thank you very much, and I will send you all that information, and I appreciate everything you are doing.
Right.
God bless you. Thank you. Good
Thank
night.
You. Right. Next caller, 970. By the way, a little while ago, we lost everybody in the queue. In case you didn't get that, you need to get yourself back in the queue if you were in there before. 970,
Yes, John. This is Eric in Larimer County, Colorado. You know, I just I'm doing wonderful. I wanted to comment on one of your comments saying that you could lose your jurisdiction by any word or phrase, and I would break it down even further to say you could lose your jurisdiction just by the capital letter in front of the word or beginning the word. And here in Colorado, we have a tool that we put together from the hand-pen documents, the first four hand-pen documents from the Founding Fathers, and we turned it into a PDF search file so that you can scroll down certain keywords when you are writing an instrument or when you are crafting an instrument, and you can type that word in the search box and scroll through this file and find out the word usage in the capital.
Right. Yeah, I'm familiar with that. We had someone introducing that to us this week.
Yes, and I would like to put that out to everybody. And if they want to contact me at through the website, my phone number is on the website in Colorado under Larimer County Organizer. And I can get that file out. And it is a work in art right now. It's not complete, but it's complete enough that you can check your words to find out if they are from the Founding Fathers or if they are Confederation words. Right. Because one of the largest problems is when you use language that the Confederacy would use.
Right. Well, I look at, and I appreciate what you're saying. We're looking into it. But the key thing, look, they play with words. They play word magic. The whole thing is fraud. You know, for instance, we know that when you go into court, you don't want to say that you're a resident. If you got to use that word, you'll say you're domiciled. And we'll use that. You know, we will use the word domicile instead of resident just to be on board. But we don't subscribe too much to a lot of their words that they've played their word magic with. And what I know what I do is I do a lot of footnotes. And so I make it clear what the meaning of that word is that I chose to put in there. But if we can clean it up a little better and make some changes to words, we'll do it. As long as we don't get lost into things where they really want us to get to, which is, you know, start talking to ourselves as the living man, we're born of the soil, and all this stuff. And next thing you know, you got 1,000 arguments you got to make or things you have to prove, and so we don't want to go there. We simply put it with one of the people, in our case of New York, and in this court of record, we're doing A, B, and C, and now we're focusing in a lot on jurisdiction. And the key thing to jurisdiction, again, you know, once you go to a courtroom or you respond to a response that the other side makes, if you don't correct the motion moving you to another jurisdiction just by language, okay, then right away you just lost it because, you see, that happened after your writing, so now you just changed jurisdiction again.
Yes.
But we are going to look at the words and see once how that works.
Well, the way we look at it here in Colorado, as I am one of the people, we the people, we only play in the sandbox of wordsmithing that our forefathers used. And we abandon the words that they abandoned. And what I mean by that is in the Articles of Confederation, they abandon those words and wordsmithing because the Confederation was not working. And this is where this PDF file, you can go down and find out where they used words in the Confederation and where the Founding Fathers abandoned those words. And so wordsmithing comes from the original four documents from our Founding Fathers. Therefore, it can be entered into court, you know, in discovery, and everyone can have the same searchable file. So anytime anyone speaks, you can type in the words that they spoke individually, and you can hold them to that jurisdiction and usage of that word from the original forefathers.
Right. And again, you know, we've got some documents that we're looking into on that. But, you know, remember, this is the bottom line as far as what we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance. Research, complete research. You know, even if we can check the words out using this document, what we need to do to get the research behind that document so that we can then say, yeah, this we believe in or this we don't believe in. And so hopefully we'll get to that point. We're going to talk about this with some people this coming week. I don't want to get too lost in this conversation because I can't really articulate too well for or against what you're talking about. But I am familiar with it, and I'm being introduced to it, and until I get fully introduced, I can't acknowledge for or against it.
You bet. Now, just to wrap it up, is the proof is in the hand-penned, wet ink writings of our forefathers.
That's what I understand. And when I see that, you see, when I get that document and see that and see the research behind that, now I can then check the document that you're talking about, and now I can find, you know, get to the point where I can feel comfortable with it. Until then, I do it what I do. And I'm very careful with words, and I'm very careful with making sure that any word we use, we try to give a lot of footnotes, and specifically on a word that we think that they may try to, rob from us and change into a different direction. We'll give it some footnotes to make the meaning clear.
You bet. And one of the examples I give is common law. I believe proper usage is in lowercase. And then grand jury is upper and lower case. That's just one of the examples.
Regular English is always, on proper nouns and nouns, proper nouns that you do things with an uppercase first and everything else lower. Your name, proper English, would be upper and lower. I know some people don't want to use their last name and so on. In the documents we haven't used any name, and I'm surprised that they let it go through without pressing on a name. Because if they pressed on a name when I went up there, I would have put John G. Jury is what I would have put as my name, because I would not put my real name down there on it because it's not about me, and it's got to be, it's about the people. And in our case, there's over 3,000 people involved with it, so they got a lot of people to try to go after. And the faster we grow, and there's a lot more people behind that, of course, so they can't really, they don't even know who's what where. They may know some of us and some things, but it's out there too much, and there are knowledgeable people throughout the country now that the nation that can pick up where I left off if anything happened to me or some others. There are people that can continue this, and we've already done enough that there's a lot of people that can continue this. So, they can't really, there's no one for them to really threaten anymore.
No, and in the masses, as we have now, feel free to contact me, and I will send it out. The PDF, and that way if we have 3,000 of us with the same document working off the same sandbox, we can all do our own investigation on it independently and collectively come back with you, John, and present it collectively. So please feel free to look me up in Colorado, Larimer County, Eric Neckel, and contact my phone number.
Right. Yeah, I've got email from you, and like I said, we're going through this process, so we'll see how it comes.
And I sent you multiple emails with proof.
I've got some of the things. Yeah.
Yes.
Again, I got to find the times, and I need someone to really, lay out the whole thing so that we can get it to a point and look at the research and everything. And again, I don't have the time right now to get involved with it. Maybe later this week is what we're hoping for. And even if I don't get involved with it, maybe Gerard or someone else will, to the point where they can really see the whole picture and then bring it to us and in a short period of time bring us up to par on this.
Yeah. Exactly. And Bill and I here in Colorado are able to do week, and we're looking quite forward to it. So thank you, John. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you. Okay, next caller is 530 Kimberly. Go right ahead.
Hi, John.
Hi.
I just wanted to tell you that, boy, you've been working hard this week, and we appreciate all the great papers that you're sending us. I have a comment, and it comes from my heart, because oftentimes we have to put ourselves in somebody else's shoes. And I want to make a remark about our fourth memorandum to the sheriffs. John, very well done. Got a lot of good stuff in there. But guess what? We've got 10 pages. And I can assure you that we started out, memorandum number one was around 4 pages. Then we had, you know, a letter we sent them on another one, which was 1 page. Then we had like 6 pages, but memorandum four was 10 pages.
Right.
And, John, I think it's overkill. I really do, and I think we could turn these guys off by shoving this much ticker tape down their throats, because they're already not, you know, making cake and balloons for us. So, I mean that with love, but I really think we're making a mistake.
Yeah. Well, look, you know, we are talking with people who are elected individuals, and they're also, you know, of course, police officers. They kind of got two sides to them. Most of them, unfortunately, it's been my experience that most of them are uneducated.
Absolutely.
They have no clue on anything. We really are speaking to the educated and the ones that are interested in being educated, you know. And I've thought about this and different things. I have a problem talking to the newspapers because they want me to bring it down to third grade level and keep it to 20 words or less or some stupid thing like that. And that's how they dumbed us down, is they, our newspapers are at a third grade level. And the stories are just, really they're tweets is what they are, and people run with the tweets. I see some places where people said terrible things about us, and they did it in tweets, and then you listen to the people responding, oh, yeah, those people are no good, and this, you know, this is the mentality they've created. Well, look, when I talked with my children when they were younger, you know, I didn't talk down to them. I talked to them and I used regular language. I mean, hey, and they pick it up just like they pick any language up, you know, whether you use a simple word or even a sophisticated word, you know, concepts is something that you can't really teach. They're kind of picked up. And if you speak about concepts and different things, you know, it's just innate that eventually they pick it up. And the younger you get them with those things, the better it is. So here we are with the sheriffs who are grown individuals, men and women.
And dumb as a box of rocks.
They're dumb as a box of rocks. And they're in law enforcement, and they're into that law enforcement. I mean, they really are. It's an ego thing. And then
Absolutely.
Now the worst connection you could make now is you now got that person connected with a politician as a political animal now. And so now you have a really strange kind of a hybrid. Now, we can talk down, but I don't think it's going to help them. I think if we talked in just the way it is, sometimes you can't say things short. Sometimes they have to be long. And you know what? They can come back and read later. And if they don't read it, shame on them. Because, you know, we're going to find out who they are at some point when we get in there. And we're going to get rid of them, you know. If they're not interested in getting educated, we're going to get rid of them because we don't need them. We need someone educated. And we will get rid of them very quickly. Before their time is up, we will get rid of them. If they're not going to obey the law and they're not going to understand the law so they can apply the law, if they refuse to do that, then that's a wrongdoing and they're a danger to us and we've got to get rid of them. So they're going to learn or they'll leave. Now, the key thing is we are talking to – there are some educated people out there. I've seen them. I haven't met them personally yet, but I've seen them on YouTube and different places, and I believe they can understand what we're doing. And those are the people that have to sell it to their people. In other words, we give it to them, and when they talk with their fellow sheriffs and different things at meetings or whatever, and they say, hey, you know, did you read about this? Or they bring something up about that. Well, where'd you get that information? Oh, well, we got the memo. Didn't you get the memo? Yeah, I remember. You see, now let them work it out. You know, we just have to sow the seeds. And their own kind, so to speak, will get it to their own kind. So the sheriffs will take care of getting the information to the sheriffs. I don't know how else to do it. I can't speak down, and in some cases we can't shorten it up. Now I know the memo we sent out, which was memo number four, to the sheriff, which was on the authorities, which was exactly what we just read tonight, and it was 10 pages. And basically, you know, it went, Dear Sheriff, this is the fourth memorandum to the American Sheriff and the deputies who took an oath to serve the people. This is a national project by concerned Americans to save America through education. So right there, look, if they're going to dump out on this, then, you know, we're going to dump out on them when we get in there. A copy of the memorandum to the American sheriff will be posted at the website. And then we give the authorities, which is a memorandum. The purpose of this memorandum is to clarify the authorities by which we, the people, act upon the process we executed and the process we intend to proceed upon. Now, I couldn't break this.
Right, that was excellent.
I could not break this down.
Sentence.
Yeah, I could not break this down into two or three parts because it's a whole, and it is an actual memorandum we used in the federal case. It's a memorandum we use for other things now too. But this is a federal. This is a what we're putting in a federal case. And you know what? If this, if they're not intrigued by this when they read these things, shame on them, and they need to go. You know, I don't know what else to say. I believe, you know, look, 3 weeks ago or so, I decided to start off every Monday night with something out of the Bible, because we don't have a snowball's chance in hell, to be honest with you. The time is so short. Only by the grace of God and the miracle workings of Him are we going to get to where we have to be. Nevertheless, no matter how this comes out, I believe the governor of the universe is going to judge the world anyway, and I believe in my heart and in my soul he's going to protect my family and myself. I truly believe that. So I don't worry about anything, and I don't worry. You know, I do what I think we have to do. I do the best I can. We say the words we can. Yeah, what are we going to do? We're going to shorten it down? And I just do the best we can. We send it out. Everything else is up to him. I can't work out those details because we don't have control, you know?
Okay.
So, but, yeah, I know it's kind of long, but 10 pages really isn't that long, and I think it's in double space or at least one and a half, I think. It's spaced out pretty big, and we're 1 inch around, so, you know, what's on a page really isn't a lot. I mean, I could shrink this down and probably get it to 4 pages, you know, 5 pages or something like that, and really kind of press it in. But, you know,
it'd be hard to read.
Yeah, I don't think that this is too much. And again, if they're not interested in this, shame on them. I mean, you know, we read things where rights secured by the Constitution are involved. There can be no rulemaking or legislation which would abrogate them. Miranda versus Arizona. If that doesn't impress them, if that doesn't make them say, wow, so that's what the real law stands for. If they look at our declaration, you know, we the people, you know, of each American county, by the mercy and grace of God, having been blessed by unalienable rights of the people as grand jurors secured by the Fifth Amendment of the Bill of Rights for the United States of America, and it goes on and on and on, and it's not too long, but then we talk about the Magna Carta, where we get the power from, and the Bill of Rights, and then we have the Kennedy quotes. I mean, again, if their interest, if they can only talk in tweets, we can't talk to them in tweets because that's not the answer. We're about education, and either they get it or they don't. And if 10% get them or 5% get them, then that may be all we need in order to get the rest of them to follow along with the 5 or 10% that get it. But
right.
When the people get in, I'm telling you, they're gonna do the right thing or they're Gonsville. And we don't have time to play with them because when we get into power, by the grace of God, we have to really secure our counties. And the only way we can secure our counties is with the sheriff. And we're going to take them by the ear, literally. Well, maybe not literally, but figuratively. We're going to take them by the ear, and we're going to force feed them, or they're going to throw up, and we're going to throw them out. And that'll be that. Because it's a wrongdoing, and they're putting us in danger if they can't get it. They have to obey and do what is right. They got to stop and do the right thing. So we'll do the best we can. But I hear you. It is kind of long. I don't know any other way. We can't give them just 3 pages.
Well, I know you're doing the best you can, yeah. And that's understood, John.
Yeah.
But sometimes it just helps to get another perspective.
Yeah. No, I hear you. We're thinking about trying to keep it short. But we can only do so much. We don't want to lose what we're trying to say to them. And remember, we need to educate them. We need to bring them up. We need them to see things they've never seen before, you know?
Right.
So.
Okay.
I know when I first started looking at this thing, I was so drawn in, I couldn't stop. It was like an addiction, you know?
Right, I know. I absolutely do understand.
Yeah. All right, anything else?
That's it.
Okay. Appreciate calling in.
Thanks,
all right, let me go to the next caller here, Ronald. Let's see, Ronald 714, go right ahead.
Okay, I guess that's me, since the automated or the mechanical woman is saying I may now ask the question, basically.
There you go. Okay.
I did some research here when you were talking about the anti-federalist and federalist information, and it made me curious, so Google is your friend. So I typed in federalist papers, comma, anti-federalist papers, comparative, and evaluations. A list came up. There's a book in here. There's a number of things, but I wondered if you knew about this. It says The Essential Federalist and Anti-Federalist Papers by David, let me see what his name is. Wutok, just give me a second. Come on, you can do a computer. Why does it have to be slow? Well, Wooten, I think it's W-O-O-T-O-N, and he edited this, and I didn't know if you were already aware of that or not. This is an answer to your request. If somebody would find or do some information finding, and they have it on Amazon.com, and it's the Essential Federalist and Anti-Federalist Papers, and basically, I'll give you a little bit. I have a read here. I'm not going to tell you a lot, but I'll read it really quickly here. In a single volume is a selection of the classic critiques of the new Constitution penned by such ardent defenders of states' rights and personal liberty as George Mason, Patrick Henry, Melanchthon Smith, pro-Constitution writings by James Wilson and Noah Webster, and 33 of the best-known and most crucial Federalist papers by Alexander Hamilton, James Madison, and John Jay. The texts of the chief constitutional documents of the early republic are included, as well David Wooten's illuminating introduction examining the history of such Americans' principles of government and checks and balances and separations of powers, representation by election and judicial independence, including their roots in the largely Scottish, English, and French, quote, new science of politics, end quote. It also offers suggestions for reading the Federalist, the classic elaboration of these principles written in defense of a new constitution that sought to apply them to the young republic. So there it is. It looks like it's a small paperback. I don't know, and I just really didn't know whether you were aware of it or not, but since that came up among the list of other things with that heading that I said, I thought, okay, I'll ask or I'll chime in and offer that to you.
Okay. All right, yeah, send me a link. I'll take a look at it. It sounds like there may be a lot of commentary there or something of that nature. Personally, you know, I'd like to get something without the commentary. What I'm looking for is what's called a harmony. You know, the best I can say is I've had a couple of harmony of the Gospels. And at one time in my life, I did my own harmony, the four Gospels. And I found it a very rewarding study. I'd love to do my own harmony study, looking at the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers to see how they, you know, how they would go point for, by point to each other. So sort of bring it into a chronological way of seeing it on the one hand and on the other, if there is that way, and I perceive that it is in that sense.
Well, you know, that's interesting because I do remember the one thing I didn't put down, and you really caught my attention when you said early on about that harmony, and I didn't do that. I just put a comma harmony at the end, and I got another list. I don't know how to email you, so if I can, I will give you this Google reference, and you can get the same things that I got if you're interested.
Yeah, what did you Google?
Okay, I Googled, number one, Federalists Papers, comma, anti-Federalist Papers,
okay,
comparative, and evaluation. Now that's where that book came up. Then I put a second look just after you said the harmony thing. I put comma, harmony, and some other interesting things came up. A PDF. I have not had a chance to look at it. This PDF is the Federalist Papers in Modern Language.
Right. Yeah, I'll start. Papers. I'll start Googling those things, and I'll Google what you get, and I'll try some others and, you know, see once what I could do. Right now, you know, we've got the copy of the Federalist Papers right up on our website, and you'll find that under Courses and Essays. And you'll find the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist. You'll also find that we have it in audio, both books, you know, both works. So that's what I've been working on, is a lot of the audio. So when I'm doing things that, you know, don't require my mind focus, you know, going out, driving around, or, you know, maybe exercising and things of that nature, I turn those audios on. And so I'm hearing them. So that's where I'm working at it right now. But eventually I need to sit down and read them. But it's really good to listen first. I did that. I do that with a lot of studies. I did thought, and
well,
I listened
immersion.
To thought three times. Huh?
Yeah, that's an immersion process. So that's awesome. That's
yeah.
a good adjunct, you know.
And also, yeah, I just recently finished, the Trial by Jury by Spooner. And I listened to his things three times. As a matter of fact, I'm going to listen to it again. And then I'm going to sit down and read through it. And I've already read through portions of it, because I make notes from time to time, something that really catches my attention. And then I go back and I'll read through that section and then pull it out and maybe save it in my own notes in some way or another. And matter of fact, the memorandum I read, which I read three excerpts from three different chapters, I think it was 5, 6, and 7, you know, just things that I thought were really, you know, just jumped out there and really good to make the position that it's the people that need to be in charge and not the government. And he does a very good job of this. So anyway, you know,
yeah,
we're all still learning, you know what I mean?
Yeah, boy, tell me. I so appreciate what you're doing. I learned from... There was something I read, I think it might have been in one of those four that you sent out to the sheriffs, because the last thing you read tonight, I recognize that. And I find that just the exposure is really good, reading it or hearing it. You know, I think I'm like you. I mean, like, I pursued, you know, I wasn't interested in school. I did go through it, you know, in myself, go through it, and got to the point where I had to take tech school and so on and so forth. But the thing is that I learned better by my own interest in reading and stuff afterwards on things. And memorization, God, that just doesn't work. But somehow, if I am interested in it, or if I pursue it and then, you know, write on it too, that gets it in there. And then if it has a point that relates to something else and it's important, you know, to my own mind, which in this case, of course, this is, there's just so much that I... Eventually we'll learn more, but, you know, the thing is, the learning situation, the learning process is a curious and interesting thing, and people are different, everybody learns differently, but I don't memorize well either, but once I know it, it's in me, you know, and that's what I need to do. So I find some things, I'm just amazed, I don't understand why some things I'll read that, like you've done, and that stick with me more. Maybe it's because I just recognize it right now. I couldn't tell you about it, but I recognize it. That's a start. And I wanted to say, I'll get off that. I wanted to say, you know, it's very interesting, the discussions that have happened the last two callers and the like, and I think it's great with language, and things are down to the Nats wing and stuff like that. If it comes to that, and the devil's in the details, and they're using details to get us, one of the things that hopefully we can use is the context of culture and those footnotes that you do. The point is making the meaning. Getting to the context and the meaning of what's going on now. Great to reference the Founding Fathers. I think that's really great. And if there's a you know, software that has that, that's great for a foundation of commonality. But I think that so when I read your papers and I see those footnotes that are clear, even though some of them are pretty esoteric in what they reference, they're still there, you know, and sometimes the definitions are very clear and easy right there at a glance. That's
right.
Awesome, and I think
it lays out all the authorities, and it lays out the meanings of things, and yeah, that's the key. You know, I really came to appreciate that when I read a book, Common Law by Brett Winters, and I saw when he wrote that half of his page, literally half of his page, was footnotes throughout the entire book, and. And then I really appreciated the fact this guy really did his homework. He did his studies. He gave the meanings. He gave the authorities. And you can't argue with him. You want to argue?
Right.
Go look and you can't argue.
And the meanings there also clarifies what you're reading. And then you have it right there rather than being, you know, that's just so awesome. So
that's why I realized I need to write with footnotes, and I've disciplined myself to do that. I do that all the time now.
I think it's great. Absolutely great. Okay, I don't want to take any more time. I just was hoping something would be as simple and easy as harmony of these papers. I just chimed in with that. So if that's any benefit, great. Otherwise, you know, I got to continue the education process. So thank you, and have a good evening. God bless.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, let's go to the next caller here. It's a wireless caller. You should be hearing something. 503.
Hello, am I heard?
How you doing?
Hi there. Hey, it's good to hear you tonight. And unfortunately, I have to admit that I missed a lot of the call. Another call came through, but it was a good message and timely and needed. So I was grateful to be able to take care of that. But as well, I just want to add, I got signed up as a county organizer. Yeah, here today. So I wanted to let you know that. That's Oregon. Oregon country here in the county of Yamhill.
All right. And that's in Oregon?
Right.
Yeah. How's things going out there? I hear Oregon, well, Washington's ready to really get completed. How are things going in Oregon?
Well, you know, the villagers are... not at rest, you know. There's a lot of things going on. People are tired, as you well know.
Right, yeah, but I mean...
Here on the Pacific body of water and all the way inland, you know, to where we meet at the Mason-Dixon, you know, we're fed up from the shoulders up. And I suppose this is a great, honest, and I didn't know it was the fourth common law branch of government. You know, I have to admit, you know, I've been on this learning curve, you know, waking up for, you know, just under 15 years now. And so I don't know what I don't know. And I'm just grateful now that I'm at a point where I can at least listen to hear so that I can begin to learn. And gosh, there's so much. And
well, I'd like to make a point to that, and I'm just thinking about this, that we all have to start getting our counties constituted. Remember this, you know, we've been pushing this for a while. Don't wait. Get it done. Even if you don't file it, just get it done. It takes 30 minutes to do. Anybody can do it. We have all the instructions. You can call up your state coordinator. You can call up other organizers in different counties and figure it out, work it out, and do it. Let me tell you. What we're doing here in New York, if we're successful on June 2nd and your county has not been constituted, now you're behind the eight ball. Now you got to rush out. You got to get the work done that you should have had done, and you got to get constituted. Then you got to turn around, and then you got to file your papers. Now you got to go into the courts, and then you're wasting time when you could be in the courts for 3 weeks or 4 weeks or whatever, and doing what you have to do instead of constituting your grand jury. So please, look at your counties. If your counties are not constituted, if you don't know if your county's constituted, call your state coordinator. They know. And find out, and then let's get it done. Get it done in the next week or two. You have to be done before the end of the month because we very well may be moving into the courts in June. And if we move in June, we don't have much time. I don't want to say that, you know, look at the things that claim to be happening in July. We don't know one way or the other, but we know it's coming close. We got to get this job done. We can't be playing around. Let's get the job done. Let's get constituted and be ready to move when we can move. And
well, tell me what that means. To be constituted, to get the county constituted. Tell me what that means.
Well, what that means basically is we have all the instructions. If you go up to the jurors tab, once you're signed in on the jurors tab and it says how to start a jury, if you watch that page, it lays it all out. It's got all the paperwork, and it's got three short videos, and it has a news release. And you send a news release, you find a library or some place to have a meeting a week from now. You call up the newspaper, local newspapers for the county, and you send out the news release to them. You get it to the right people, and they need to put it in. If they put it in, fine. If they don't, well, you've done the honorable thing. Just get it out to them. You make phone calls to as many people as you can to come to this. It's sort of like, just coming together to be educated on this and counting by the raising of the hands to go forward with whoever wants to do this, to go forward with the grand jury. But we're laying it out to the people, doing the honorable thing. And we're inviting everyone that comes to this to participate and come into the system. And then once you go through this constituting by the raising of the hands, then you do. We always try to have a notary there, and so we do affidavits, three affidavits that this event took place, and we do a declaration which is one page and four pages of authorities behind it. So it's a five-page document that's filled out for your county, your state at the time and the place it took, what place it took at. And then that's the papers you file with the county clerk and with the court clerk with a letter telling them, hey, we'll be talking with you soon because we want to come in and get access into the courts. We have all that information, all the videos. It's 28, 29 minutes of videos. It's three short videos back to back to back. And that's how you constitute your county. It's just being honorable, inviting the people of the county to come and participate and to get involved. So once we get this June 2nd case going in the federal courts, if we're successful, and I think we have a very strong possibility of being successful on June 2nd, once that happens, then on June 3rd, you can walk into your courtroom and take control, walk into your courthouse and take control, okay, and start the process in your county. We need to be doing that in all 3,142 counties as soon as possible. So if your county is not constituted, you need to do it next week. You have till the end of the month to complete the process so that you are ready to take control of your court system in your county on June 3rd, as long as all things go well. So now you don't have to file the papers with the court or the county until you feel comfortable with that. And what we did in New York, there was like 16 or so counties that filed all at the same time. You know, we constituted them. We waited till we had about 16 or so counties. And then we all went to the court the same day and filed them in our own counties. And then every county that constituted thereafter just filed. And we still have counties that haven't filed yet, but we'll get them all filed eventually. But they're all done. We are totally constituted in all 62 counties. So that's what it is. Follow the instructions on the Jurist tab. Anybody that's new, go to Jurist Orientation. Go through all of the things under Jurist, you know. Look at the Jurist documents. There's a tremendous amount of information. We wrote them for the purpose of explaining things. And go through how to start a grand jury. On the Jurist tab itself, it tells you exactly what to do. It's a plan. Just click on the Jurist tab itself and read that page, and it's the plan on what to do next. And so, you know, we kind of laid out.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Can a petit jury be any less than 12?
No, they have to be 12. 12 plus 2 is the usual. They'll have two spare wheels, so to speak. If someone gets sick or someone is removed, you have that backup. So there's 14 people, but only 12 get to involve themselves. The other two are backups. And the grand jury starts off with 25, but we can whittle down to 12.
And how is it supposed to be? I mean, one of those of the 12 can determine, you know, can take the case and do what it needs to be done with it in any...
You're talking about the grand jury or the petit?
The petit.
The trial jury or the grand jury?
The petit.
Oh, yeah. Well, the petit is the trial jury. When they're called together, they'll hear the trial and they'll decide on both law and facts on guilt or not guilt and what the punishment is. It has nothing to do with the judge. It has nothing to do with statutes. It has nothing to do with the legislators. The people decide what needs to be done. And the focus is really...
As the power is left with the juries today in New York, does it take three in the panel of 12 to overturn a conviction or to not convict? How is it set up there in New York?
Well, that's interesting because they have what they call what's that term they use? A hung jury, okay? and then they try to do retrials. Well, look at a hung jury means that one person isn't going along with the other 11. And a hung jury means that these people walk. You can't retry them. And yet they don't acknowledge that. They control the jury. They don't allow them to decide on the law, only the facts, and then they require the facts to be controlled by the law, how the judge interprets it. So therefore they get a lot of convictions when the jury may not have convicted. The jury may have felt compassion. The jury may have felt that it was, even though the person might have been guilty, there was extenuating circumstances. And if I was in that situation, I might have done the very same thing. You see, we don't know how the jury's thinking. That's up to the people to decide what the punishment, if there's a punishment. I mean, restitution is what's in focus in a common law grand jury. And
is there anything like the voir dire process in the common law grand jury then? Is that what you're saying? There is something like that voir dire process that do that psychological warfare they take us through to become a member of the jury today?
Well, they filter you through a psychological system in order to get the right jurist, absolutely. And they also choose the jury foreman for you because they want to get the right person. So the whole thing is fixed. It's set up. It's tainted.
And when you said the word person, literally that's what they're after. They're not you just got to be there as the surety, right? Guarantee the whole payment.
I'm not understanding.
The commercial side. I believe the courts to be nothing but a banking process. Bottom line.
If you look on the civil end of things, the equity, there are two sides to the court. Ultimately, there's equity, which brings you into civil law. It could bring you into admiralty and that kind of thing, the UCC stuff. And then the other side is common law. The common law is what they shut down. And they keep you out, and they hijack you constantly into the equity side. And that gets that's a hybrid onto its own. You know, they're following corporate charters and not the Constitution.
Well, and is it suspected that because of the common law enrollment across the land, reenacted, if you will, whatever the right word is, do you think they're just going to set aside their commercial courts and processes that they've been in?
We're not asking them to set aside the commercial court. The UCC stuff that's legal, the admiralty stuff that's legal, that's all for out at sea or through commercial processes. All that is legal. But what they have done is they've changed everything into some kind of a hybrid, ultimately, the combination of all of those things, and they call it civil law. And civil law, ultimately, you go look up civil law and Black's law, and you find it connects directly with what's called Justinian law. And Justinian came from Roman and has its tracing all the way back to Babylonia. Okay, and really it's legislators trying to control every aspect of people's lives through legislation and law, and that's what that's all about. So all of that is illegal. Look, when you go to court, you are to expect to get a common law court. If you have a UCC situation, well, even that is under common law. But they have the UCC, which is the Universal Commercial Codes, that you have to follow and use inside the common law process. As far as admiralty court is concerned, or maritime court, that's for things out at sea. And that's where they get to us. They use processes, which is called like in rem, for instance, to go after your property without having to go after the individual. That's why when you go to court, you never find that they do an affidavit. Okay, they never do an affidavit. And without a sworn affidavit, then there is no subject matter jurisdiction for the court. But they ignore that, because the whole thing is about settling the accounts for the bankers or for the commercial, the large corporations. Okay, that's what it's all about. The people always lose. Okay, you never ever win unless you know how to win. We've won a lot of cases on that level, so to speak. Why? Because jurisdiction and consent and fraud on a court.
Well, when you're right, and that's hard to move around.
Yeah, it's a battle, and you have to stick to your guns on this, and they'll constantly pull you back into their court system, and you got to pull yourself back out, and you got to put them on put their flesh on the line. You got to put the judge's flesh on the line. You know, that's what you got to do.
You know what I'm learning, if I've learned anything at all, they've been mirroring that something within me, and that's something within me that they gain power from, because it blocked me from the light, is my my darkness. And my darkness, you know, just comes from the lack of the muster, you know, to really hang in there. And, you know, I only speak
ignorance,
because
ignorance.
It's currently in my face, you know, and I'm living it. And I know that there are hundreds of thousands more, because this industrial complex is not slowed its assembly of our bodies at all, you know, and the surveys taken of the numbers are increasing. You know, incarceration is still increasing as we speak right now.
Right.
And, you know, I just, just takes my heart away. And,
yeah, most of the people in jail don't belong there.
Continuing to happen.
Right. Most of the people in jail don't belong there. We can remove them by habeas corpus. When the grand juries come in, they can reevaluate large, you know, we can look at all the issues where people were put in jail because they had a weapon and they weren't doing anything wrong, just they didn't have a permit, or people driving without a license. We can remove all those people right out of the system and get them out of jail.
And if everybody's got the right agenda and the right head, then this could be just a beautiful flow of energy releasing these gates and opening these gates and these doors and these people returning, you know, back to their lands amongst their people. That you know, doesn't have to be blood and mayhem. And I think there are plenty of administrators and bureaucrats out there that is their problem today, and yet why they hold so many bodies, because they've held them for so long that they, with their sick dementia now from this years of this cancer, they live in fear, and they think that, you know, their life, or they'll lose their, be handed their head if they let somebody they've had wrongly in prison for the last 45 years without a verified complaint from an injured party.
Mm-hmm. Right. People lost their homes. There's no contract. There's no verified complaint. There's no affidavits. People don't understand. They haven't got a clue. And lawyers don't. They just ignore it, or they're just that dumb.
Said,
I don't
you
know.
Said my dilemma. You said my dilemma, John, earlier, and it was the third grade education that I got. And, you know, I grew up yet far enough in a rural area, away from the city, that I didn't get hit with the hip slicksters and the hustlers and the politicians, you know, till I became taxable enough to where I could go out there and generate the tax on with my own energy, you know, and put it out there and be exploited and have my inheritance, my trust from the great creator take it from me, so misled from me. It's just incredible, you know, how my mind was captured at such youth. And yet today, stalling, and I feel such a distance with any of the youth today. And wow, I just hope, you know, the voids will continue to fall in on themselves, and people will get connected, and we'll get above our third grade level, because that's what you see. That's the epitome of this, of the educated people. This is third grade stuff that we're being destroyed on a daily basis in these human grinding mills running the bar association, so feeding their young. It's just beyond me that it's overlooked and accepted and tolerated. It blows me away, you know, because I know that...
Well, because we've been taught and brainwashed to be very good slaves, and a lot of people still, they go... I know people who are ill, and they go to pharmaceutical doctors. They were taught the schools were, you know, run by the pharmaceutical companies, and it's all about selling the product and keeping the people ill and never caring, just, you know... feeding the people with pills to make them feel a little better or something. And I've told them, hey, look, here's places where you can get healed with this and healed with that. Nah, I'll just stay with my doctor. Well, they want to die, and they're going to die. But they're going to make a lot of money off them before they die. They just don't understand. They did a good job on us. They control our education. They've controlled our entertainment. They've controlled even our religion. They've controlled it all, the monetary system, everything. And so, you know.
I know that. So, you know, on one hand, you know, I don't know what I don't know. And so I can just grandiose and get on things that are righteous and of good calling and very well needed. But, you know, I have little faith, because truly, you know, and to put it out there for all, it's very traumatic. You know, the experiences with the bar associations running the prison industrial complex that's been going on far longer than I've been alive, and that's 50-some years of age of living now.
Mm-hmm.
It's overwhelming, and I'm grateful for one book that I got to read lately. Well, actually two, because it gives a full sequence to my life. One was called Coming of Age in America, where I actually witnessed on the page of this book, while laying in a dungeon cell on my back, what happened, what was going on to me in high school, why certain things happened the way they did. And then the other one, most recently, within a couple of years now, was by a lady whose name is, she's a doctor, and her name is Karen Huffer, and she's a doctor of psychology, and she writes a book called Overcoming the Devastation from Legal Abuse Syndrome. And oh my gosh, you know, there again, my life on all the descriptive pages of that book. And she's got a solution. She's got a great and wonderful solution in this book. You know, they should be handing them out. The court system should be set up to be handing these out because we all become, you know, members of this terrible traumatic event, and it is life-changing. And I was very grateful because I've been trying to diagnose myself because I've become aware now of these mental incapacities that I actually have to pay attention now today from the many years of traumatic injury being handled so grotesquely, you know, as a property, exactly, you know, as a property. I just lacked the knowledge. I didn't understand the business. Well, you know, and I was one of those that was, you know, just didn't know what I didn't know. And so this book, though, it's Overcoming the Devastation from Legal Abuse Syndrome.
Mm-hmm. Well, we do have a lot of educational stuff, obviously, on our website, so let me encourage you to get up there and learn common law and read the biographies of our founding fathers or autobiographies.
I'm testing that now every so more, and in a case actually here within the county of Yamhill, Oregon State, you know, state of, you know. Uh-huh. Definitely I'm not within this state, though.
Right.
But anyway, so I am, and I'll put that out there. It's ongoing. It's a case that's been nearly 3 years now, day for day. It's over what they call so-called marijuana. While in the state at this time, we're trying to get the ballots together so that we get we got an initiative to get on the ballot here to vote and end prohibition in Oregon on hemp. Hemp was already deregulated on the industrial side in 2010 with
Senator. Well, yeah, there's a lot of good thing about hemp, and as a matter of fact, I'm going to be putting something on the website soon about hemp that people might want to look at and consider because it's got a lot of healing factors.
It would change the economic health of every community in the country right now.
Yes, that is one item that can change a lot of things very quickly. It cures a lot of illnesses, and that's the key. But with that, I got three more callers left, and it's getting late, so I've got to move on.
Thank you for the time and the opportunity, and man, love you, and God bless.
All right, thank you. You too. Bye-bye. Okay, next caller is Sarah. You go right ahead. We got two more callers after you. Go ahead, Sarah.
Hi, good evening, John. I just want to say it's just so awesome to reiterate what you said about education, because that really is the solution to everything, because once people know what they need to know, there's no way anybody can be fooled.
Right. Well, that's the key thing. As Jefferson said, if a people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. So, you know, ignorance will get us nowhere. That's why today, when we started tonight's program, I particularly chose to read Proverbs chapter 8, I believe it was, and it talks about wisdom and understanding and knowledge and where it comes from and how God created all the things with those things. He had wisdom, he had understanding, he had knowledge. And so that's what we have to get. We have to get those things.
Absolutely. And so I'm absolutely behind you for the 10 page to the sheriffs. They're entrusted not only with our liberty, but also our lives, our pursuit of happiness. They have a huge responsibility, and 10 pages is not a lot in that respect.
Right, and the 10 pages really were, you know, they had one-inch borders all the way around, and it was at least 1.5, maybe two space. So, you know, really wasn't all that much, and it was easy to read in the sense of spacing. And ultimately, I think this stuff is real. Look at the truth, and true law is really easy to read. It's common sense to begin with. And that's what common law is common sense and under principles. And the principles that we teach is a sense of honor, a sense of mercy, and a sense of justice. That's the principles we operate by. That plus logic will give you, that's common law.
Exactly. And, you know, again, you stated that it was part of the federal papers. So they should be fully aware of what has been filed, which you did.
Right. Well, yeah, we have the founding documents, which is the Constitution with the Bill of Rights attached, of course, and the Declaration of Independence and the Magna Carta. And then, of course, all of the United States Supreme Court rulings, very powerful rulings we've used, and they're still coming out with powerful rulings. Sometimes when things go bad, it's because they took on a case that jurisdiction wasn't good in, but it was a commercial case that they had to deal with and make a decision on. I think the pulling in of those cases are really probably done by the enemies within the United States Supreme Court. But a lot of good cases do get in there, and we get some good decisions, and we use them. We use them all over the, we use them in our paperwork all the time. And the judges in every state are bound to obey it. And that's the point we have to make when we go to court. You are bound to obey this. And if you don't, then you're in bad behavior, and you know what? We're going to sue you. So,
absolutely, absolutely. So, Godspeed, and just know a lot of prayers are with us.
Okay, thank you, and Godspeed to you too. And we'll take our next caller. 845 number. It's a 522. Go right ahead.
Hi, John. How are you?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. I have a question. When you were talking regarding jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
No one, and I don't know, the validity of this. It's the Trinity, and it's the roles that one plays when they're in the courtroom. Excuse me. How they're like the triangle with God at the top, and he is the grantor. And, then they make us the trustee, but we're the beneficiary because, God granted us inheritance. So we are the beneficiary. And, you can easily make them the trustee because you're in charge of your trust, actually. I know that they kill you off at 7 and throw you overboard and all that and declare you dead. And
right.
If you
get hung up in this UCC stuff in court, maybe through the IRS, you get pulled in and they're coming at you, you're lost at sea, so to speak, and you're under the admiralty stuff and they're really beating you up. Well, that is the key, because in their courts, once you reveal the fact that they don't have the fiduciary authority over you and they don't have really a proof of claim against you, because it doesn't exist, those two things require an affidavit, and they will never, ever, ever do it. They don't do it, and you can win every case in there by pushing on those points. And maintaining your jurisdiction back to a court of record. And, again, that's where your training really has to go. It is a mindset. I'd like to at some point start teaching that somewhere, but I haven't got the time to really, go onto that process at this moment. But people need to understand jurisdiction. You can win any case with jurisdiction. When you understand how things work and consent in jurisdiction they need affidavits. No affidavits, there is no court. Without a sworn affidavit against you, there is absolutely no court case at all. And people don't know it, and lawyers are not taught it. And and you have to understand that. And if you're not in a court of record, if you're not in a common law, and you reject by not giving them consent, you're not consenting to their process. Again, they have no case against you. They can't do anything. And even if you were convicted by a jury, even if you were indicted by a grand jury, both of those things are facade. They belong to the corporation. They don't belong to the. It's not the true jury. It's not real.
Right.
It's a phony. It's a fraud. And once you realize that, you can argue that, we're arguing cases of people that have been indicted by the grand jury, but the whole thing is a fraud, and we're making headway.
Absolutely. Yes, you are. Another thing is I had to update my card, so my donation is definitely coming in. I just sent off on my jurist handbook because, just like you said, those really need to get out there into people's hands and let them know that this is real, this is actual, because they've been drinking the Kool-Aid, they've been brainwashed. But also, There's a gentleman on YouTube. His name is William Wagner. He was the only reporter that they allowed into the courtroom when Michael Jackson was going through his trial. So he also is real good friends with Michael Jackson's attorney. But as he was once doing, and this was back in maybe, I'd say almost a year ago, we were corresponding because he, someone else was starting up a grand jury.
If you can, try to keep it short because there's more
okay,
people behind
I am.
You and a
okay.
couple other people just came in, so, you know.
Okay. Well, anyway, to make a long story short, he is, like, in the media, and he was trying to form a grand jury himself through other people, but they weren't as knowledgeable as you guys are, and so, you know, it really didn't go well. But I'm pretty sure he would love to team up, and, you
well,
know.
Well, if you can get word to him, tell him about us, let him check us out, let him come to our Monday night meetings, and let him participate. And if he
okay.
can be an advantage to us, of course, that's great. You know?
All right. And the last thing, I finished the test for the administrators for Mr. Woods. He's a fascinating man, but I really feel like he owes me a cigarette. Like, I feel like I'm dating the man because it was 17 videos, and I did get all the tests done. I had to put them in the mail because I had some computer problems.
Right.
But anyway, I wanted to say that, but he is fascinating, and I just want to encourage everyone to really look at the courses and essays because, I learned so much. So I'm going to let you go.
Yeah, you were talking about American History by Thomas Woods, and
yes.
we've got a lot of the lectures out there, and that's part of our course is the American History, and we've got Common Law, we've got Trial by Jury, the History of the Jury. We've got a lot of stuff out there, and anybody that is planning to be an administrator needs to be going through that course as soon as we get up there. You can kind of jump in right now. We got them up there. It's just that we're not giving you credit at this point. So, but you should be listening to those tapes anyway and reading some of those that stuff. And as soon as the course comes out and we got it on board on our site, then you can start getting credit for it and get through the whole process. So, yeah, we thank
right.
you for the work doing on that. So.
Oh, no problem. No problem. I really enjoyed it, and I learned a great deal. He's
right.
a great economist. So,
right.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right.
And you guys have a great night. Thank you. God bless.
You too. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, we got a couple more people that called, so we got about four or five more callers. We don't have much time, so I want to try to push through. So let's keep it short so we can get everybody in. Next person on is another 845 number, 605. So 605 up here in my area, New York.
Hey, I just wanted to remind everybody that we're having a statewide conference call on Wednesdays at 7:30, and we're dealing with all of the issues that will make us as effective as possible, both at the court and being prepared to be successful in every way.
Great.
So 7:45. Look on the website, look on the calendar, and it'll tell you how to log in.
Okay, so that's for New York, and that's our organization meeting, I guess, and basically getting ready for the court and just organizing and getting things going here in New York. So.
Exactly.
All right, Oliver, thank you. Okay, let me go to the next caller. Donald is the next caller. Go right ahead from 206.
Hi, this is Rosie from Seattle.
Oh, Rosie. Okay. Well, you got Donald up there, but go right ahead, Rosie.
That's my husband, Don.
Well, I figured that.
I just have a quick question that several of us in Seattle, we all have the same question. Because we know that all the governments at every level is a private-for-profit corporation.
Right.
And the common law grand jury, how does that work with a private corporation, kind of like we're trying to oversee?
Oh. Well, look at, you know, the trust is still there. It hasn't been removed. The government is still there. What they've done is they laid a corporate trust on top of it, and it's a corporation, and it's all actually owned by people. And so they laid that on top of our true trust, the common law trust, which is the government of the state, the county, the town, or even the United States. And all they did is change the shingle around, but they've used the same people we've elected and all the stuff. What they did is they took control. They infiltrated every aspect of our government and have taken control and have brought us down this path of destruction. All we need to do is go in there and flip it back and reinstate what is real. Remember, the fiction is believed by the common people, by the regular people. So they already believe that this is our government, and generally speaking, it is. It's just that the enemy has taken over. So once we bring it back, they're still going to believe, but we're going to bring it back to common law. And if they are not obedient to that, we pull them off and indict them. You know, the belief system will continue and will bring people back to reality. Unfortunately, people believe the fiction is reality. And the emperor has no clothes, and one day they're going to wake up and see that the emperor has no clothes, that the fiction is fiction, and they're going to see real reality soon. So
that answers the question.
Okay. All right, let me go to the next caller. We still got a few more, and we're coming up on midnight. We want to close down shortly. So next caller, wireless caller coming from Jersey. Go right ahead.
Hi, John. Jason Berg, New Jersey coordinator.
How are you doing, Jason? Try to keep it short. We've got a couple more people still.
Okay, you're doing fantastic. 48 pages. You're a true professional when it comes to writing, and the extent of your history lesson is very important because it displays waste to our enemies. And if they can't accept the truth, then they need to give them a little longer rope from themselves to hang themselves.
Great.
And you're doing a fantastic job. We are waiting for it. We're looking to have a minimum of 25 members from New Jersey up into New York on June the 2nd.
Right.
With our people. I know I can have 8 people up there in my van, so we'll be coming up there with 8.
Okay.
So,
all right, just keep getting the word out. We need more and more people. We need to flood that courthouse on that day on June 2nd.
And that's very much. I know you don't have enough time, but really, everyone is doing a fantastic job. And I wish everyone good health and good prospects, because the way we're going, we can do very well to help each other. And the whole purpose of life is to be a server, and that is the red man's way. So read the book, The Gospel of the Red Man, if you really want to feel Christianity and all your other religions. That's the heart of the new movement. If you're looking for a spirit, that's your spirit guide. And thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Jason. Talk to you later. Next caller, 503, another wireless caller. Go right ahead, 503. You got a minute or two?
Oh, you brought up a question you said about the jury. What kind of a jury is it? What kind of a decision are they making? And obviously they're not the common law jury that this whole movement is about, restoring the common law, which means common sense. So how is this thing going to work? But two guys, you two questions. The jury, what are they deciding then? You said earlier that that's not our jury. So what? And they are not deciding the common law.
What do you mean? Well, I'm not sure I understand the question. Are you talking about the grand jury that filed the papers in the federal courts? Or are you talking, you know, what are you talking about?
I'm talking about just a general statement of the overall jury in any circuit court setting. Or district court setting or superior court setting.
Well, the jury has to be pulled by a jury pool. You see, the jury has to be pulled from a jury pool without prejudice. And it's a pool. You know, you pull it out. You don't pick and choose who's going to serve on the jury. There might be one or two questions which would remove a person from sitting on a grand jury or a trial jury. And that might be if they're working for the government, they can't be sitting on a jury. I mean, if they're a lawyer, they have a title, they can't be sitting on a jury. Other than that, offhand, I can't think of anything else that would prevent the person from sitting on a grand or a trial jury, other than maybe if they're psychologically disturbed, of course, they can't sit on the jury. And that will be decided by their peers, so to speak. You know, if someone has got an issue, that they'll have to, we'll teach them to work that out. And
and
we'll be gentle and figure things out. Huh?
Well, thank you. Excuse me for interrupting, but thank you. And then in your talk tonight, you mentioned a way that you study using a word beginning with an H. I thought it sounded odd. Like I don't know if you were trying to say the word harmony or if you were actually saying hominy or home or something?
Oh, well, I was talking about studying, for instance, the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers in a harmony study. In other words, getting them into chronological order and then working out the harmony between the, because the Federalist Papers was a debate on our Constitution, what was going to go into it and what wasn't going to go into it and why this should happen and why that should happen and so on and so forth. We were going to use the Federalist Papers to create also, and I'm just studying them myself, to create part of a course. And that's going to be a difficult course to create with the Federalist Papers because a lot of things you'll hear in the Federalist Papers, you know, when you listen to the audio or you're reading it, a lot of those things didn't make it into the Constitution. And really it's the argument and with the end results of what makes it in is the product of the end conversation. And so... you know, I had studied the Bible in a harmony, you know, with the four Gospels particularly. I did what was called a harmony study with that. As a matter of fact, I tried to work out the entire New Testament that way. That was a difficult job. I never really got that done. But I did get the Gospels done, and there were other people who had done work with that, so I've seen their work too. Thomas Jefferson did a work with the four Gospels, and he removed the miracles, and he brought things together in order to reveal the philosophical Jesus, because, you know, he wanted him, the words of Jesus, the philosophical Jesus, to be among the, you know, the philosophers and the great great people in the great conversation. And so really we were just looking for that. I guess that's what you're talking about for the Federalist Papers, to do a harmony and or a chronological study of it.
Well,
you know,
okay.
I have a there was a Bible teacher, one of the greatest Bible teachers that I ever heard of. He recently died, but and he was just turning, I think, 90. He's 89 or 90 when he died. But in any event, he did some very, very serious Bible studies, and he did works on the kings of the Bible. And he did it in a chronological fashion and breaking them down in such a way that no one has ever done it before. And it was a very well done study, and it was a book that he put out on that. And when you look at things in a chronological fashion and see how it really, you know, turns out and what took place in a chronological way, it really reveals interesting facts and things that you can see spiritually in the case of the Bible. And it's true anything with any great work like the Federalist Papers, you know, we really need to understand. I've heard the justices say that, you know, if you really want to understand the Constitution, you can't understand the Constitution without reading and studying the Federalist Papers.
And may I guess why you say that?
I didn't say that. That's one of the, I think Scalia might have said that, or some Supreme Court justice said that.
Different mindsets. There was one for the contract and ones that suspected, you know, the ill intent behind the contract.
Right. Well, the thing is that, you know, when you read the Federalist Papers, a lot of things that are in there didn't get into the contract. I think what got into the contract, in my humble opinion, was pretty darn good. Not perfect. There's a few words in there I'd like to see out of there. Only because of the frauds that are playing word magic. If we didn't have the word magic, we wouldn't have to worry about those few words that we're concerned with, like the word citizen, you know?
And then subject.
The subject is another one, yes.
Well, John, in a perfect transition and in a home run on the 2nd of June coming up there in Albany, what's it look like in a perfect slate from that point with the action of the common law jury and its placement in our communities?
I'm not sure I understand the question. Try to say it again.
You said we've got to demand our space within these buildings that we've already paid for with our blood.
Oh yeah, yeah, oh yeah.
So it's going to be their business is going to carry on because they've got a case though, and they can't disrupt that. There's too many livelihoods still sucking on that. So that's not just going to end or go away. So you're in a perfect world, in John's perfect world, and all the people behind you and with you, and the great plan of it all, what's that transition look like, you know?
Well,
if it's a home run win on the 2nd of June for you there in the federal court, then what's the rest of the picture look like?
It'll look like 1789 with the benefit of hindsight of what could happen and how we would prevent that from ever happening again. And what that would really mean is that the fresh start in the courts, where a requirement of the court is the jurisdiction of the court is required to be in the venue of a common law procedure, in other words, a court of record. And that would include even equity court. Equity court should be under a common law because it's the law of the land.
You're saying that would encompass, would you say that would encompass their entire account load, their entire portfolio, their cases, criminal, civil, and otherwise?
You'd have to realize that there is still a place for other things. For instance, when you get into the federal courts, there's admiralty court. There's still a place for that. But generally speaking,
But you've got to be three wizards in Sunday to know how to manipulate that. I've only been in a couple in those venues
a couple of times,
and they're nasty. And I was so intrigued by and paying attention to every word I could hear and writing them down that they came over and sat on my lap. And then because I didn't react funny, I said, okay, sit on my lap. I'll hold you. They're clever, deviant people in those federal venues.
Right,
I've never been under so much.
What you have to understand is that all courts, unless the people choose not to do it this way, they can choose to have their decision making by an arbitrator or a judge if that's what they want. As long as that was their decision, and we all understood that, that's fine. But generally speaking, when people want to go to court, when they go to court, they want justice. Justice requires a jury. If it's a criminal action, it requires an indictment by a grand jury. We, the people, are the grand jury and the jury, and it needs to be picked up out of a pool, and principles need to be taught to the people. You know, right now, they spend 8 hours with these people, and they prepare them so that they can control them. We will spend 8 hours with them. We will prepare them so we will free them. We will teach them the main principles of being a jurist, the sense of honor, a sense of justice, and a sense of mercy. And if you rule and judge all things and make all decisions from those principles, those three principles, you will go to sleep at night, and you'll feel really good about yourself because you have done the best you could. The other thing is that there are two maxims that really guide us as jurists, and those two maxims are, number one, in order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party. No injured party, no crime, and the state cannot be the injured party. Maxim number two, for every injury, there must be a remedy. If you've been injured, you go to court, you're looking for remedy. Remedy must be met. And the punishment upon the person is focusing in on the restitution of the injured party, and therein is the punishment upon the person. It's not, how dare we think that we need to punish people by putting them in jail? And then you leave the injured party totally unfixed and thrown out into the streets and forgotten about it.
Nothing. Oh, and that's the political category that's never spoken of. I don't care what religion, creed, color, or otherwise, but they've definitely got their own brand, and most of us have to feel like we've got to go underground with our tarnished name and reputation. It's really a scourging kind of feeling that's been branded and placed upon us all. If all of us on the outside of the prison fences and walls, which, you know, you travel down, well, I travel down I-5, and I feel like I'm on Alex Jones' PrisonPlanet.com. You know, the way he promotes that talk is fences and high walls going down I-5, you know, all the way into Canada. It's like, wow. But anyway, Matthew, it says somewhere, you know, the prisoner needs to have about 1,000 people on the outside writing him letters, and, you know, that doesn't happen, but... Here's what I want to say, and I'm going to shut up and get out of the way here. Here's what's going on. This is a marvel thing that's happening for me right now with you. This common law thing that's going on, and all across the country, you know, people are up in roars. And how often does something like this happen? And do we really expect these people to just step aside, park the waves, and let us come through freely and peaceably and set up shop amongst them? And carry on the likable affairs of our common law venue and all of its sweetness, kindness, love, and mercy. You know, okay, that's good. You said that's going to be a greater power than I can recognize in my own little feeble mind, but okay, I'm with it and I'm going for it. So I wonder what else, you know, there's other people involved in here that need to be involved and probably are involved, and I'm even unaware of that, and those are the people that are paying attention to how the planets are lining up right now with all of its energy. You know, that we're nearing into a fourth cycle and an ending moon or a beginning moon or something, and I know all this stuff is relevant and makes sense, and it's what's pushing you and the people that support you and levitate, gravitate, and meditate on time, in time, with time. It's all so relevant, and even if it, and this can never go out with the clit, with the, you know, like putting your fingers on the candle wick. You know, this thing can never go out because from coast to coast, east to west, north to south. You know, this is a mindset and an evolutionary mind awakening. And however, it has to reach out throughout everybody, as it did in that movie, The Matrix. I watched, it was so cool. But what an awesome way to get the idea of how we
well,
how my mind.
Well, again, you know, we're interested in justice. That is the key. And the word justice in Black's Law Dictionary is synonymous with virtue. And virtue comes from the Bible. It emanates from God Himself. And that's where we need to bring this back to. We need to understand that law originates from God, and it's natural law. And once we realize that, he blesses us with liberty when we bend our knee to the natural law. And that's what we want to bring into the courts, natural law. And natural law is law that's run on principles, righteousness, and justice. You know, again, a sense of honor, a sense of mercy, a sense of justice. When we the people judge ourselves as people, we the people judge the people, not the government, not a fixed puppet system, but the people. And we do it with compassion. We do it with mercy and knowledge and mercy and honor and justice, and we're looking at the same time how do we fix the injured party. If this is the person that injured that party, how do we fix that injured party? How more just can you get? When you make your courts just, now your whole structure becomes just. The political structure becomes just. Why does the political structure becomes just? Because you see the purpose and the job of the grand jury or the common law grand jury, particularly working with the investigative body, which is the administrators. There are four administrators for each county, and they are the investigative body for the grand jury, and it is their duty to fix and repair any wrongdoing, whether it be in the political or the judicial realms. And so when we see a political situation that there is a wrong duty, we need to go talk to that individual. We need to talk with the bureaucrat or the elected individual or the appointed individual, and we need to make them fix that problem because they're doing a wrongdoing. It's an injury, whether they're breaking the Constitution and injuring people or whatever. Well, ultimately, they're breaking their oath somewhere. So we tell them how to fix it. They get so many hours, 72 hours to fix it. If they don't fix it, then they go up before the grand jury. We call the grand jury together, the 25. We pull together. We produce the case before them, and they decide whether they're going to indict or not. They get a chance to try to fix it without an indictment, too. And if they can't fix it without an indictment, then they decide to indict. Then that person is yanked from office or pulled from their job, and they're brought into trial. And now we fix the problem because we remove the problem. Just think about that now. When all you got to do that is once, and all these other bureaucrats, all these other elected individuals or appointed individuals or just hired individuals, all of a sudden are going to start to behave themselves. There's still going to be evil there because there always is evil everywhere. The hearts of men are desperately wicked. Who could know it? So there'll be evil, but it'll be hidden. And when we find it and we root it out, we'll bring it to justice. And we'll do the best we can without having to bring it to trial. If they're not willing to confess and fess up and fix the problem and pay restitution, then they'll be sent to court, and we'll let the trial jury figure out what's going to happen. And they will decide what is going to happen. And now just think of a world like that when you have true justice back in the courts. It's not going to be perfect. There's always going to be some evil somewheres. There's always going to be a problem somewheres. But generally speaking, we're going to have a just society again. And by the mercy of God, he will bless us. If he gives us that gift to be able to take that back, then that means he has blessed us with liberty again. And if he has blessed us with liberty, then obviously we are within the will of God, at least generally as a people, as best as we can be. But none of us is perfect. So that's what we shoot for. We'll shoot for perfection, but of course we'll never achieve it.
Shalom.
So I got one other person on the call. I appreciate your call, and maybe we'll talk to you again next week. Okay, let's see. Last call, wireless caller, 828. You got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hi, John. This is Jay from North Carolina.
Hey, how you doing, Jay? Good to hear from
you. Okay. My question was about the Juris Handbooks, but I answered my own question while I was online. My question was, can you order them with a debit card or a credit card?
No.
But I see that it has to be done with a check.
Right. Check or money order at this point. We eventually will move that direction, but not right now.
Okay, well, I'm gonna try to order 100 this week. Within the next couple of days, I'll try to get a check sent off.
Okay.
And let's get these handbooks ordered. And
right, we have to hit the quota in order to get the order actually going. And,
yeah.
You know, I was not going to cash any of the checks or the money orders until we hit the number, but we were promised money, so I did cash them, but it's the money sitting in the bank, of course. I don't like to let money sit in the bank. I like to put money in the bank and then buy what you need to buy with it as quick as possible. But anyway, it's there. As soon as we hit the quota, the amount of money we need to make the purchase, we will do it, and we'll get that moving. And hopefully it's soon. Everybody needs to be ordering these handbooks, and let's get it going.
Yeah, I'm going to order. I'll get you a check in the mail in the next couple of days.
Appreciate it, KJ.
Okay. Thanks.
All right.
Thanks, John.
Good night. God bless you. Okay, I guess that ends it for the evening. Thanks, everyone, for coming. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And let's do what we got to do. Let's get organized in our states. Let's get activity going. Let's make phone calls to people who aren't active that are in the system. Let's get them activated. And those who could make it to New York and in Albany on the 2nd, let's be there. Let's fill the courts. Let's take back the nation. If your county is not constituted, get it constituted. If you don't know whether it's constituted or not, call up the state coordinator, your state coordinator, or call up other organizers. Find out what's going on, and let's get the job done. On June 3rd, if we're successful on June 2nd, we're taking the power, and you got to be ready. If it happens, you got to be ready. Let's do it. Okay, good night. Thanks for coming, everybody.